Hey, good evening, everybody. We are the Tri-State Sports Guys coming to you live from beautiful Norwalk, Connecticut. I'm Mike DePalma. At the Hoboken studio, we got Neil Lynch. I'm sitting next to Danny Santarella. Tony D's behind the glass.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, like when you're in college, like your first year in college, and you come back from school, and like everybody gets together, and like, you know, you haven't seen each other. That's kind of what tonight feels like, and everybody's back. This is the first time we had the four of us in a long time. Like, we used to go to like Shady Beach, go have a couple beers, a couple laughs. I'm sure Neil and his bros went to the Jersey Shore. You guys and Darian, what did you do, polo? Is this some sort of polo club?
We would just swap BMWs driving around.
Here's the keys for the summer.
That's
it. So, I mean, for those of you who don't know, I mean, Dan is from probably the richest zip code in America, if not in the world.
It might be North America for sure, possibly the world.
And as you can't tell from his demeanor, I mean, this guy's super ultra rich.
Absolutely. And I'm well kept.
You're well kept.
I'm in shape.
That's it.
I'm
and
doing
just,
Bikram yoga. I'm a good-looking guy, too.
And
you
just,
what do you want to tell you?
And you just hobnob with Ernie Banks.
That's all I do.
Just you and Ernie.
My personal buddy.
Just me and Ern.
Yep.
Just on the polo pitch. All right, we've got a good show for you tonight. We got Mike Vaccaro from the New York Post calling in a little later on. We're going to start out with the NFL. Now, we're not going to break down all the games in this week. Everybody's seen them. Everybody's heard their opinions throughout the sports world. But we could talk about this every week and just go through the rap sheet of NFL players who get in trouble with the law every week. It's insane. And it's not just the NFL. It's kind of throughout sports. But it seems like with the NFL, you get more in-season stuff. And I think that maybe is just the nature of football where you have there's days of rest in the middle of your season. And you don't get that so much in baseball or the NBA. But you got, I mean, obviously the Von Miller story, you know, him being suspended. But then, you know, new allegations come out about him bribing the tester, and now he's got his mom living with him to keep him out of trouble. Neil, how much trouble would you have to get in before you say, hey, Ma, you got to come up and live with me in Broboken? What are we talking about?
I can do nothing wrong in my mom's eyes, so I don't know that she'll ever move in based on troubles. I think it's more of just her forcing her way into the apartment and not leaving.
Just to make sure your bed is well kept. Various, you know, it smells good in your apartment. Your underwear is folded and put neatly in your drawer. I know what you're saying. But then you have, obviously, Aldon Smith. I mean, that's the real story that came out this week. Pac-Man Jones gets arrested every week, so that's like almost a non-story at this point. But Aldon Smith gets a Dewey on Friday night, early Saturday morning. The first question for you, Dan, is did you have a problem with Harbaugh playing him in Sunday's game?
I didn't, and, you know, my feeling is Jim Harbaugh clearly knows his team better than me, and if he thought it was the right move, I have no problem with it. But as for the Deweys, the thing about that is I think we all know someone who's had one, or we know of somebody who knows somebody who's had one. They happen. I think a lot of us have done it, and I think it's blown out of proportion when it's these athletes as though they're on these trumped-up murder charges or something. You know, he made a mistake. It happens. It's not a capital crime here, you know what I mean? So I just think we blow it out of proportion. The guy had too much to drink. Could he have called those limo services and stuff they have for those guys? Yeah. But we could call cabs, and a lot of times we don't.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I just think DUI is not murder. It's not rape. It's not the end. It's not the worst thing in the world. I just don't know why we get so worked up about that.
Well, I agree with you. I think I didn't have a problem with him playing him. And I think somebody, I think it was on ESPN, made the point that, you know, this guy is his job. If you get in trouble, if I get in trouble at my job, you know, I'm still expected to go to work the next day. Yes, whatever my charges are pending or whatever. And so that's this guy's job. And he's got his responsibility. If he's healthy, he's still not hung over, whatever. He's got to get out there and play and let the, you know, help his team out. And clearly, I don't know, I can't imagine that that really affected them, and that's the reason why they got blown out this week. But my problem with the DUI issue is on both sides. The people that you're talking about that want to rant and rave, and how is this ever possible? You know, like the Chris Carters of the world. And I think Roddy White is a guy that I get annoyed with his Twitter accounts when he's on there calling for people to with their pitchforks to go kill George Zimmerman and all that. You know, he's a little out there when he comes to Twitter. But his point was, like, these guys are all kind of two-faced. All these guys have gotten into trouble themselves. We talked about it the other day, a couple weeks ago, with Mark Mays talking about Johnny Football. And meanwhile, when he was in college, he's jumping on cars and punching through windows. And so you get that all the time. So I'm thinking to myself, if I'm 23 years old I mean, if I was in college, I mean, if I had the money to go to bars, I would go to. I didn't go out to bars because I didn't have any money to go to bars, and we would just get 30 packs and sit in my apartment and drink because I wouldn't, you know, I didn't have money to go to bars. But if you all of a sudden are 23 years old, and that's not condoning it, I'm just saying, I'm just being a realist here. You know, I'm with you. It's just like a stupid decision. Hopefully he learns from it. My only issue is the NFL does have this policy in place where in any major city in the country, you can get a car service on the NFL, no questions asked. They're not going to, like, reprimand you for being out drinking at 3 o'clock in the morning. So, like, why wouldn't you take it? If I had that, even as a young kid, I think I would be smart enough to be like, well, I'm just going to call this thing. Why would I want it ever if I was thinking about it? Why would I do that? So that's my only problem. Like, what are these guys? You see it over, and they do the rookie symposiums. They do all that stuff. Why is it that they just feel they need to have to drive?
I think it's the fact that they spend hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars, on this garage full of souped-up cars and fancy things. And what's the use of having them if you're not going to take them out to the clubs or the bars or whatever? On the first point, I would like to know from the people out there, like you alluded to some guys that are just in outraged about this, I want to know what was their punishment that they'd want? Do they want what? He has to miss the game? He's got to miss 5 games? He's got to miss 3 games because he had a few too many to drink? And the third part of it is, when you look at the NCAA, they're totally irresponsible for how they prepare these guys for this windfall of money that they're about to fall into. And these guys get in like a guy like Alden Smith and the rest of the league making hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars. And I don't think any of them know how to properly manage how they live their lives.
Right.
This guy's going out. You're right. He could call that number and somebody will come pick him up in a cab or a limo or, you know, whatever. Why don't they use it? Why do they think they need to be like the tough guy when you and I sit here right now and we say we both call that number? But do we know that we would? You know, if you had like a $300,000 Maserati or whatever the hell those cost, wouldn't you want to drive that home? You got the chicks digging you and whatever?
It'd be pretty cool to bring a chick home in a car service.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it would also be pretty badass to roll through the club. Now, Neil, I mean, my thing is people that want to criticize John Harbaugh for the way he handled it, and everybody wants to bring up Herm Edwards and how he handled John Abraham, and he jumped ahead of the league and didn't play him and all that, and that's all rah, rah, rah. That doesn't work either, because it's not like guys that play for disciplinarians are all of a sudden don't get into trouble. We see trouble on the Patriots. We see trouble everywhere. So it's not like that worked. If that worked, if it was like Herm Edwards after that never had a problem with anybody in terms of the law, then okay, and yeah. But there is no right or wrong way to handle it. I think it's up to the coach and how they want to handle it. I mean, his mindset is, this guy's got a job to do. He's healthy and he's clear-headed on Sunday morning. He's going to play for me, and he'll deal with the, you know, the repercussions later on. But I'm trying to win football games. And so it's not like Herm Edwards' plan works across the board. Neil, what do you think?
Well, you know, drunk driving is kind of a different situation because, you know, that expression covers a range of drunk driving. There's, you know, I was one drink above the limit and I was caught, and, you know, I didn't hurt myself or anyone or any property. And there's what Alden Smith did, which was like 7 in the morning, he crashes, he's got weed in the car, and it's like, there's degrees of gray, right? And he was a very dark color of gray after that situation. So, I mean, you know, when it comes to when you crash your vehicle, you're way over the limit, especially at 7 a.m., then I think you have to treat it differently than if you were 2 beers too high and they had a, you know, pit, they had a roadblock at the tunnel or something like that. You know, and you got, at some point, you got to sit him down and say, you know, I don't think that's, and maybe he, you know, I haven't really dug into it too deeply, but if Harbaugh did have a meeting with Alden Smith and said, hey, here's the deal. You know, I don't want you to play, but if you can make a case for you to play and give us a shot to win, you know, are you going to enter rehab? You know, that could have been a stipulation of him playing in that game. But, you know, it's never an easy situation. It's very delicate. And, you know, the short of it is he's going into rehab now. And, you know, hopefully he'll come out of it a better man.
Yeah, I mean, my thing is, it's not like John Harbaugh can change the laws of this country. And the fact that, you know, you go to Europe, people don't drink and drive. I went to Australia for my honeymoon. I mean, you get one DUI in Australia, you lose your license for life. So they drink like fishes over there, but they don't ever drink and drive. It's like not even an option because they're like, I mean, you could have one beer and they're like, all right, we're taking a cab, that type of thing. So if the country really wanted to be, you know, really took this seriously, that's what they would do. But they don't. And so to act like John Harbaugh is now supposed to be, you know, this guy who's going to change the culture of the world, the bottom line is that's a reality of America, the reality of young men, especially young men with money that are going to have it, young single guys. That's not condoning it. I just think he's looking at it as a realist and not this idealist that he's going to be able to change the world. I think that's part of – and I like Herm Edwards at times, and I don't like him at other times – but I think he's an idealist, and it works to some extent. But, you know, if for all these people that he thinks he's helping, I don't think he really does. I mean, people are going to help themselves. They're going to make choices for themselves. You know, I don't know about what John Abraham has done after his suspension by the Jets way back when, but I don't know the decision of Herm Edwards to suspend him changed his life in any way, as any more than the DUI did in and of itself.
Right.
So I don't know that people look to these coaches of NFL, maybe at a high school level or a college level, it's a little bit different because you're talking about young, especially high school, younger kids. You're at the end of the day, these kids are playing as part of like a maturation process. But once you get to the NFL, they're there to win games. You're getting paid to win games. It should be no different than other professions. If I'm in a big, you know, and I work in construction and I have an integral role on some construction project that day, are they supposed to make an example of me if I go out and get in trouble? Or are they supposed to say, you got to do your job and deal with your personal issues off the field? You get a paycheck, and that paycheck is for you showing up to work and doing what you're told to do.
Well, I think, really, I understand everything you're saying. I agree with a lot of it. But the bottom,
right.
Well, yeah, you're always right. But the bottom line is, yes or no, would you have sat him?
I wouldn't have.
I wouldn't have either.
No.
He's a world-class pass rusher, and I'm trying to win a game. You got the Colts coming in, and I'm playing them. And for people to sit there and say what you just said, which is very true, that – all of a sudden, John Harbaugh is supposed to be John Q. Law, and he's supposed to come in and say, hell no, I won't have that. That's unacceptable. You broke the law, whatever. I don't see it. I don't get – you talk about phony outrage. I don't get the outrage about a DUI. Now, if he's out there committing felonies, and he's out there committing grand theft or whatever, I understand if the league says, hey, John, do what you want to do. I would understand him then going, I can't have a guy out there.
See, but I even think if it's grand theft, even if Alden Smith stole a car – I don't think it's John Harbaugh's responsibility to sit him.
So you think the league should step in?
Yeah, the league could step in. John Harbaugh's only job is to do what's best for the San Francisco 49ers. If he thinks in his mind that it's better to make an example as a whole, then that's one thing. But if he thinks it's better for him to be on the field, then that's his decision. And you could say, you could debate either way, but there's not a right or wrong answer to, like, he should have done this. There's not a book of things that you should have done because
right.
You've seen people on both sides, the disciplinarian coaches that do it, doesn't prevent people from going and doing it again. It doesn't, you know, if he thought it's better for his team to have him out there and let him deal with it, I'm sure he had some sort of team meeting and talked about it in-house, and he thought that's the way he'd handle it, and that's John Harbaugh. I mean, Neil, are we crazy here?
No, not at all. And, you know, I think it's a little – the fact that he'd been busted before in a Dewey plays a lot. I think plays into it a lot for the people that are hating on his decision because it's the fact that he's a repeat offender, and you know you should have addressed it the first time around. And you know if you really disciplined him the first time around, then maybe he wouldn't have had this problem. And now you lose him for what, a month? So, I mean, it all depends on how you your personality and how you mesh with your coach and how you mesh with your team. To be honest, the chemistry that you have with all those different elements. And, you know, if, it's not on Harbaugh, but at some point, you got to kind of get ahead of the storm and so that you prevent something like this and the backlash that comes along with it. And I think that's what people are criticizing him for more than, you know, it's not just personal gain or team gain. It's the fact that, you know, he's now dealing with more, I think, than he would have if he just said, hey, we're going to sit him down.
Well, right, exactly. And so, you know, you're going to have these problems when you have young men that are ridiculous athletes and have everybody throwing, you know, girls throwing their bodies at him, guys throwing drinks at him and all that stuff. It's just the reality of the world. And there's not any coach that's going to change that. There's problems in Bill Belichick's locker room. There were problems in Bill Parcells' locker room. I mean, are these guys, you know, and their jobs are to win games. And I think every situation is different. There's not like a this guy, you know, if somebody does this, this is the proper way to handle it. As far, I mean, the league could do their own thing because it still looks bad on the league, and the league could do it. That's a completely different thing. But as far as the coach, his job, he's getting paid to make decisions. If the team wants to say, hey, John, we're taking him off the field, he's not playing, then they say, John's like, hey, my job is to coach the players that are in my locker room.
Right.
And that's what I think. And then you look at, you know, if you have a repeat offender like Pac-Man Jones, who's had problems since before he got into the league and has literally never slowed down with his problems, you know, you could look at that and say enough is enough because at this point it's hurting his team and we can't count on him. But that's a whole different thing. Again, a case-by-case scenario.
Right. All I was saying was about Harbaugh was at some point, I understand wins and losses, that's the end game, but at some point a coach has a moral compass, or should. And if a guy's out there with DUI, I've already said that I don't think that's the worst thing in the world. I know that a lot of awful stuff happens with that. But what I'm saying is if there is something that happens and the league doesn't step in and Harbaugh goes like, you know, I don't want guys like that on my team. Let's say they stomp somebody at a club or they whoop somebody's ass or whatever they do. That's all I was saying, that at some point you should step in and make a decision that we can't have guys like that representing our team for a week or for 2 weeks. You know,
right.
The DUI thing, what he did, that isolated incident, I don't see a suspension. All I'm saying is a coach can't just look at wins and losses. At some point, he has to look at the kinds of guys he has on the field.
Well, but that, in the end, affects wins and losses. That's what I'm saying.
No, that's what I just said, though.
Yeah,
it
no,
does affect it, but does that mean that, you know, he's supposed to do something when a guy has a DUI, or does that mean he's supposed to do something when a guy commits a serious crime, or when are they supposed to?
It's a case-by-case basis. I think it's the coach's decision. Whatever this guy did, if it was some egregious DUI and, God forbid, somebody got hurt or killed, if it was just a regular – it's a case-by-case basis. At the end, it is all about the teams. At some point, is what this guy doing affecting our team is going to prevent us from winning games? Can we no longer count on this guy? Is it detrimental to guys in the clubhouse? Are they all thinking whatever? And I think it's always going to be that. Whether it's a DUI, whether it's a fight, being at a strip club and fighting with a stripper, whether it's guns, whether it's anything. I think it's always got to be on a case-by-case basis. And it's never this blanket, when somebody does this, the penalty is this. It's not the court system.
And
it's a real world.
And it's solely based on the coach's ability to put his best team on the field. If the league doesn't step in and penalize anybody.
For the long term. I mean, not that game. I mean,
that's what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
For like a game. I'm only talking about a 10-gamer.
Yeah. Neil, buddy, whoa. You put the buzzed in. Like, I got to keep my word in here.
Yeah, I mean, it's based on talent, too. I mean, Lawrence Taylor played half his games on cocaine. So, you know, I think it's Tom Smith is not a starting defensive lineman, and he's some scrub on the practice squad. Maybe coach tells him, he's on special teams. Maybe coach tells him to take a seat. But when he's a determining factor in wins and losses, yeah. I mean, the coach has paid millions of dollars every year so that he can get W's any way possible. And if it means suiting up a bastard, he'll probably do it. I don't know many coaches that would go against that. And the coaches that do go against that, they have confidence in the rest of their team to step up and fill in. But, you know, if I'm put in his position, if I'm John Harbaugh, I sit down with the guy and say, yo, this is your second time doing this. What's the deal here? I can't have you getting into trouble all the time. And really talk it out and see, like, is this affecting your play? And if not, then, I mean, what more can you do? A lot of people just look the other way.
Yeah, and I think it's in addition to it is affecting your play, is it affecting your teammates' play? And I'm not a big believer in this, like, you know, Hollywood idea about clubhouses and, you know, rally around certain guys and all this thing. I think a lot of that's kind of made up and it's trumped up by the fact that there's 24-hour news cycle and you have to make stories. But you could make a case, in my opinion, you know, we could all agree to different, degrees as to how serious a DUI is, how serious a gun charge is. I look at somebody who, you know, goes out and cheats on their wife every weekend and doing all that as being a horrible human being. I think a guy who's like a deadbeat dad and has all these kids and is late on child support, are you supposed to suspend them too? Because I personally think that they're a bad guy. I mean, I don't think that your job is to do, you know, there's going to be guys when you have a locker room of 53 active players plus however many guys are in your practice squad, there's going to be a half dozen to a dozen that you don't like as human beings. And are you going to, if you happen to like this guy, you're going to treat him better. Or if you don't like him, you're going to use an excuse to suspend him. That's not what the coach's job is. Coach's job is to win games. And it's always on and it's not just that game. If he thinks that, okay, benching him this game might lose us this week, but will help us down the road, then that's a decision he makes. It's still about winning games. Maybe not that particular week, but as far as winning the most games you can out of your 16-game schedule.
Yeah, I don't think if he sat Alden Smith, I agree with you to a point. I agree that there's clubhouse guys, there's guys that, you know, they might not be the best player, but they affect the other guys by their experiences. They have like Giambino.
I was just
going to
say,
you know, Giambino. I like that.
Can we spend the next 90 minutes on Giambino?
Absolutely.
And his gray beard?
Absolutely.
I mean, he's like Gandalf. He went away for years and he comes back with Gandalf the White.
That was a Lord of the Rings reference right there.
You bet your ass. We talked about Lost last week.
We're
really cool.
All I'm saying is that I believe what you're saying is true, that it is an end game where the wins and losses matter the most. All I'm saying is you'd like to believe a coach could run a ship where his guys kind of conform to a system of doing things. Now, I don't think Smith should have been suspended, as I said, but what I think is when it's something a little bit more egregious, then, yeah, even if it's going to affect your team and your ability to maybe win the game, you have to make decisions that try to get your guys to do the right things. And I know I follow college more, and that's obviously coaches can run a much tighter ship there. But a DUI doesn't fit the bill for this particular instance. So I guess my point is moot, but that's all I'm saying. That I think the coach gets those millions of dollars, not just for X's and O's, but to keep his guys in check. I know you can't be with your guys all the time. They're all grown men, and they're out there doing things, and they have money, so they can do a lot more stuff than they want.
Make more money than the coach.
Absolutely. But I don't think you're just giving Jim Harbaugh however many millions he makes just to win games. I know that's the end of it. But I think at some point you're looking at these coaches to say, kind of keep guys in order a little bit if you can. I know that's hard in that league. It seems exceedingly hard as the years go on.
But I think they go hand in hand. If you let a clubhouse go crazy, then you are going to lose games.
Right.
So they go hand in hand. That's the coach's job to run that balance. Well, in addition to like off the field stuff like this, I have a lot of problems with guys on the field and their behaviors, particularly quarterbacks. So when we come back, I want to get a former college quarterback, an elite college quarterback from the Johns Hopkins University, played under legendary Coach Babs. I'm going to get Neil Lynch's opinion on antics of such guys as Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady and all their shouting. But we're going to take a quick commercial break, so tune in about 60 seconds to hear our opinion on that. Thanks.
Surrounded by the dead. They were in rioters, as we were told. We have survivors here. Civilians, women, children. Is anyone out there?
Follow the story in the Ragnarok Rising Saga by D.A. Roberts. Available on Amazon, Smashwords, Barnes & Noble, and BooksAMillion.com. Visit RagnarokRising.Weebly.com.
I mean, you make fun of me for bringing up the wizard.
But
we got Ragnarok Rising. That's just a tie-in. I'm just, you know, that's our audience.
It's beautiful.
Because guys buying trading cards and watching Gandalf and Lost. All right, well, we'll have a call as always if you want to chime in on anything we've talked about so far. 347-637-2306. So, Neil, I want to get your opinion to start things off here. Obviously, we saw the blow-up between Coach McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers on the sideline last week. I didn't mention it 2 weeks ago, but I did have a problem with the way Tom Brady was reacting to his wide receivers. Just berating them and embarrassing them on the field, not even on the sidelines, like on the field when they would have some sort of miscommunication. You know, as a guy who was the quarterback, I mean, you think that's acceptable to act like that in either instance, to sit there and scream at your coach on the sideline? I know there's always the legendary stories about Phil Simms and Bill Parcells, and I get all that. But to have that and then Tom Brady just embarrassing his rookie wide receivers on national television. What are your thoughts on both of those things?
You know, it's tough to tell because, you know, we're watching from a distance, right? We're only seeing what the camera captures. So I don't know that we can really judge based. We don't know the full story. I mean, for me, it's like it's always been, I'm going to go to the receiver and say, hey, you know, the route needs to be sharper. You need to make the cut harder. Let's get it right. You know, he messes up again. You kind of let it slide. But when it becomes a repeated pattern and a trend and they're just not picking up on it, sometimes you got to, like, you know, you reach a boiling point and you got to raise your voice and you got to put them in their place. You got to let them know, hey, this is serious business. You need to get this right or we're going to start, you know, losing games. And I think that's what, you know, people say about Peyton Manning all the time is that he never really berates his receivers on the field, but you can see that he gets visibly upset and he stays on them, not just on the field, but off the field. You know, I was reading that Sports Illustrated article a couple weeks ago, you know, about Wes Welker, and Wes is like, yeah, I mean, I thought Tom was bad. I mean, Peyton is like every single play he's analyzing, dissecting. And I think from a receiver standpoint, you're more apt to blow up at Peyton than Peyton blowing up at you, because he's all over you all the time. But you don't know the story with McCarthy or Rodgers either. I mean, it might be a case of where you're with that guy, you know, 7 days a week, 6 days a week. You've stated your case. You've let him know what the deal is. And at that point, maybe he's just tired of hearing a broken record. And, it, you know, I don't know if I could say the same for Tom Brady and the rookie receivers, because they've only been together for a couple weeks now or a couple months. But, you know, I think, you know, Rodgers and McCarthy, they've been together a while. I think that's a broken record scenario where, you know, Rodgers is probably sick of hearing what McCarthy has to say. Brady, on the other hand, it's like, you know, I don't know if it's just he's so not used to dealing with rookie receivers and whatnot, but, you know, he's kind of been spoiled, I guess, for the past couple of years.
Well, here's what I have to say about, you know, comparing Brady and Manning. I don't have any problem with you on the sideline or at practice riding a teammate about, you know, being in the right spot, knowing your role, knowing your responsibility in every play. But we watched it live, and we watched that Jet game, and it was not him doing that. He looked like a baby, like just screaming, like with his teeth clenched, like my two-year-old daughter does. And that wasn't to make the guy better. It was because he was angry and he had a little temper tantrum on the field because the wide receiver, the rookie, was in the end zone 20 yards down the field when they had that miscommunication. They had to settle for a field goal. And he's sitting there behind the center just like gritting his teeth, screaming with his face turning red. Like, let's not compare the two of them. I think they're apples and oranges. To sit there and say, like, I'm going to ride this guy, him just yelling at him, that was not like, I got to do this to make him better. He looked like a little whiny baby.
That's one way to take it, but at the same time, if Brady didn't care about your play or didn't care about the, you know, if he didn't care, he wouldn't do, I don't think he would do that. I think that most quarterbacks, me personally, if there's a receiver that I don't see any talent in or that I have no, you know, I'm not inspired by the guy, I don't see any potential talent, and I don't see him getting any better, I'm just going to leave him alone and ignore him. I mean, and if I feel like this guy could be better and should be better, then I do get a little angry, and I want him to get angry and get better on his own. So there's two ways you can look at it. One is, you know, this guy sucks, and I'm just going to make him feel awful, and I'm going to let him know to his face, or I'm just going to ignore him because there's no chance of him redeeming himself.
Well, here's the problem I have with that. I mean, it seems to be a double standard because – obviously, Tom Brady is an all-time great. Well, you know what? So is Terrell Owens. He may or may not make the Hall of Fame because of, you know, how he's rubbed people the wrong way, but he's an all-time talent. And when he would ride his quarterbacks for not making a play or whatever, he was made out to be a jerk like he was. And he would embarrass his quarterback on the field. And why is that any different? If the wide receiver is the best player on the field and he wants to make his quarterback better, why is that okay? Why is it why is that frowned upon? I mean, when like Santonio Holmes and all the wide receivers want to bash Mark Sanchez, I and most people agree that you can't do that. But when a quarterback does it on the field and embarrasses them, why is there that double standard? I don't get that. I mean, Dan, what do you think on this?
Well, I mean, I listened to both your points, and I hearken back to, I saw Tim Ruddy. He was a center for Dan Marino.
Bet your ass he was a center for Dan Marino.
Yeah, I saw him interviewed a few years ago. And he was talking about how that was commonplace with Marino, that Marino would show up his linemen, his wideouts, his backs, his defense. I mean, whoever the hell it was, he didn't care. And he said when you would go to Shula, he told you, well, that's Dan. That's just how it is here. And Tim Ruddy has no shot at pushing Dan Marino out of Miami. I mean, he's, you know, clearly. And his point kind of was that the quarterback is the guy who takes the heat. When they lose or the offense isn't gelling or they're not moving the football or whatever happens, he's the guy who takes the heat. So when he takes it out on you, you're just a conduit for him to get his stress and anger and stuff out. And if you don't like it, then hit the road. So I think it's just as much about the coaches allowing it. Because I hate seeing teammates show one another up.
I hate pitchers do it.
I hate it.
I compare it to a pitcher doing it. And then maybe that's why Neil sides with them, because he's a pitcher too. Guy makes an error, and he's yelling, you know, and it gets shown up. It happens all the time. It happened in college, happened in high school, happens in the pros. Matt Latos does it all the time.
Yeah.
It's one of the reasons I can't stand that guy. But God forbid, what if a guy gives up a game-winning home run, and what, the center fielder going to run in and yell at him?
Well,
hey, buddy, how about not hanging the slider, Chief?
Right. I think the point with Ruddy was, when the Dolphins can't move the ball, the Miami media doesn't come up to Tim Ruddy or Mark Duper or whoever it is and ask him, you know, what the hell happened. They go to Dan Marino and go, what's the problem? Now, he can point out a million different things. We didn't block up front. I threw some bad passes. My guys dropped the ball. We couldn't run the ball, whatever it is. But the point with Ruddy was, when he had a beef, Marino that is, he just screamed at you.
Yeah.
And if you wanted to, you know, say something, then you could get off the team and, you know. So what do the coaches allow? What does McCarthy allow? What does Belichick allow?
I think I agree with that. I think that it's more of something that you tolerate because this guy is so great and because he's under this pressure.
Right.
That still doesn't mean that makes his teammates better. And the idea that, like, when Brady was doing all that, you listen to the radio the next day and it was, that's why Tom Brady's great, because he gets on his guys. That doesn't make the guys better.
No, well,
so it's something you tolerate, like you said. I mean, when I was in high school, I played behind I'm not going to mention names, but a great quarterback. I went and played semi-pro, and he was 2 years older than me, and he used to get all over the linemen all the time. And I was a guy, I mean, I've said it on the show, probably one of my biggest faults is I have a problem where I always want everybody to like me, so I would never do that anyway. But I remember being on the sideline, you know, they come off the field, and I'm holding my clipboard as a sophomore, as the backup quarterback, and the linemen would come over and talk to me, like, see. And a lot of these guys were underclass when they were playing under him. And, like, that's why we can't stand blocking for this guy, because he sits there and he yells at us on the field when he gets sacked and this and that. And I remember thinking to myself, I'm never, ever going to do that. I don't care if there's a complete breakdown and I get my face driven into the turf. I'm never going to do that, because I remember these guys thinking, I'm over here busting my ass. I might have made a mistake, but when you throw an interception, we're not up in your grill. You know what I mean? So I get it. I get Ruddy's point. You tolerate it.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean it's the right thing to do. What do you think, Neil?
It's about balance as well, because, you know, you remember Dan Marino getting in your face, but do you remember him coming up to you, you know, after a game in the locker room or at a bar and slapping you on the back and saying, great game? There's got to be a little bit of balance into what you do. So you might see Tom Brady berating his receivers on the sideline or on the field, but you don't see in the locker room or behind the scenes, or maybe when the camera's not on him and he comes up to the receiver and says, hey, man, you know, sorry to get on your ass, but, you know, we need to work this thing out if we're gonna work together. You know, it's little things. A lot of people, and I'm not saying that it has to be a one-to-one ratio, you know, and this spans out beyond the sports world to the business world. If you're in a management position, or if you're in charge, you're the leader, you're the captain, you can get hard. You can be hard on your underlings, your troops, whatever. But it's that little sweet moment that lets them know, hey, you're human, and they want you to succeed and this is a team environment. So it's, I understand that it's, if you're like that all the time, if you're yelling all the time and there's no sweet to you, then yeah, there's going to be anarchy and there's going to be revolution. But if you can show a little bit of, you know, humor amongst all the fury, then I think that, you know, you'll be okay, especially if you have talent.
Yeah, I agree with you. None of us know what goes on. And maybe Tom Brady goes up to those guys in the locker after the game like, hey, sorry I lost my cool there. Or I'm just saying that I'm just analyzing that one instance that we all saw that the majority of the sports talk world seemed to think was great, and that was why he was a leader. That act right there is not being a leader.
No, and
grinding your teeth and screaming.
But at what point did we get to the situation where it's up to the quarterback, like, to coach the players?
Yeah.
At what point did the offensive coordinators have no say? I mean, would this have happened under a guy like Tom Landry, whose players said nothing? I mean, Staubach, Danny White, none of those guys. I've never seen them show anybody up.
Yeah.
I mean, at some point, isn't it the coach's responsibility to look at his quarterback, even if he's a guy who makes $20 million a year, and go, listen.
That's my job.
I don't need you showing guys up. They pay me quite a sum of money to do just what you're trying to do. I'll pull the young wide out of sight. Where's the wide receivers coach? Where's he saying, hey, sharpen up your routes? You know, when did it become Tom Brady, as great as he is, he's a Hall of Famer, but at what point is it, did it become his job to coach the New England Patriots offense? That's my problem with it.
Well, and so the frustration extends beyond that, because I think if you look at both of those quarterbacks, they're not just upset at McCarthy. You know, Rodgers isn't just upset with McCarthy. I don't think Brady is just upset about the receivers. They're upset about their overall state of the team, in my opinion, because the Patriots could have done a lot of things to prevent where they are right now. And, you know, granted, they are 3-0, and there's a lot of kudos to be handed out to Brady and the coaching staff for surviving, you know, this plague of injuries. But I think Brady is still a little miffed that the organization let Welker go. And I think that still plagues him and sits in the back of his head. And in Rodgers' case, you know, I think that he's kind of upset that maybe, I don't know, they haven't bolstered that line at all, that offensive line, and he has to scramble for his life most of the time. You know, maybe it's something that extends beyond just McCarthy, and I think that it's just that those people get the brunt of that anger.
Yeah, I don't know. For whatever reason, and this might sound hypocritical, I have a lot less of a problem with Aaron Rodgers and the coach getting into an argument. I just feel like there is a relationship between the leaders on the team and the coach where there is some ebb and flow and arguments back and forth. And it bubbles over, but I think, you know, these guys have won a Super Bowl together. I think it was on the sideline, and I know it was on camera, but it's a little different. I think that those are two different things. Am I looking at this wrong? Is that hypocritical?
No, I don't think it's hypocritical, but I will say this as someone who detests the Packers in a season that's clearly lost for the Vikings, that's beautiful. Seeing those two yelling at each other, oh my, it's like, it was like an oasis in the middle of a vast wasteland. It was just that gorgeous. Just seeing him that upset at him when, yeah, I got to listen to McCarthy every day. They beat the Vikes twice every year, and I got to listen to his fat face. And then all of a sudden, him and Rodgers are beefing on the sidelines. I don't know if you're a hypocrite or not, but I know that was absolutely awesome to see. Just seeing those guys mad at each other. Oh.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be a good sight to see this frustration on the great Packers. And I thought the Packers were going to do big things this year.
Yeah.
And they still might. But to see them at that point, I mean, that doesn't happen when things are going well. I don't know. I don't think that that's a sign of leadership or of lack of leadership. I think it's a sign of a person's personality. And maybe part of that personality is what made them great. You know, maybe Tom Brady's fiery personality is what made him great. But that,
absolutely,
to me, is a flaw. I think it is. But I think it's a flaw as far as like what Ruddy said. I'm sure what made Marino great, that fire in his belly, is what made him great. Most great guys are like that. There are a lot of people that are great are unlikable. But I don't think it doesn't mean that you have to take everything and just say everything is great for the good of the team. Maybe if Dan Marino wasn't like that, maybe they would have won some Super Bowls. You know, you don't know.
No, I agree with Neil. I agree with Neil's point that the quarterbacks are clearly frustrated with the all-around play of their football team. But that doesn't mean – that's like assuming that you're upset and the wideout who may or may not have screwed up, or the lineman,
yeah,
who missed the block isn't upset, or that he's not all in and committed to the betterment of the team or whatever. And I think that's selfish.
Exactly.
I mean, that's a selfish viewpoint that, okay, like Ruddy said, you're the guy under fire, Dan Marino. Everybody asks you questions when we stink. But that doesn't mean I'm blocking any less hard. That doesn't mean that our wideouts, you know, ran a 10-yard in when they should have run a 12, so you threw a ball over his friggin' head or whatever. So I think it's very presumptuous to think that Tom Brady wants to win more than the young wideout or the guy who's playing linebacker or whatever the case is. I think it's selfish. And it's ill-advised to do that because most of the guys in the team are going to beat these quarterbacks up, aren't they?
Well, yeah. Well, exactly. Yeah.
Why are you
going to beat Tom Brady,
yeah,
up? But I think, like, there are instances where if you think that the guy's giving a lack of effort, like if you see, like, DeSean Jackson, good talent, there's times you clearly see him dog it. Randy Moss. If a quarterback wants to get in Randy Moss's face for dogging it on the field,
I have no problem with that.
That's no problem.
None.
If somebody on the defense wanted to get in Kyle Wilson's face last week for having three personal foul penalties against Stevie Johnson, you know, even though the last one was kind of, you know,
right,
BS, that is something you get in your face. Like, yo, you're costing us the game. Like, that's not like a mental error, like, you know, just like not knowing where you're supposed to be or a physical mistake. That's just like you being an idiot and putting your own personal anger and all that ahead of the team. I have no problem. If somebody wanted to grab, if David, you know, Harris wanted to grab him by the face mask and say you're being a jerk, I have no problem with that. Then he should be embarrassed. But to do that, it almost looks like you're saying this guy doesn't care.
Yeah.
And I don't think that anybody on the Patriots doesn't care.
No. No, I would agree with you 100%. And I just think, like I said, just because you're the guy who's in the most pressure-packed situation doesn't mean anybody else is trying any less hard than you are. And if you start looking at things that way, you're looking for an awful big problem in most of those NFL locker rooms, I would think. Because, like I just said to you, I mean, most of the guys on that team, outside of, like, your kickers and punters and maybe a couple DBs or whatever, can whoop these quarterbacks. So you're getting into some territory. I'm just looking at it from a physical safety standpoint. You're going to start screaming at your lineman who weighed 350 and can bench press 600 pounds.
Yeah,
I mean, you know.
Just crush your head.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, I would just keep my mouth shut if I was, you know, Brady or Rodgers.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, like, you take a look at both of these guys, and they were both underdogs, if you will, coming out of college. You know, Brady going in the sixth round, and no one really knowing him or having any faith in him, and him fighting for a spot on Michigan's football team and getting the starting position, him fighting with the Patriots to let them know that he's the quarterback of the future. Aaron Rodgers trying to prove that he was, you know, the next Brett Favre or better than Brett Favre. That determination, that fire, that passion that you see in a positive light that got them to where they are today can also – so I can see your point in that it can also be twisted and become something really negative if they don't watch themselves. Almost, you know, like Bud Kilmer and Varsity Blues, if you will.
Wow. Well, there's your Varsity Blues reference.
Wow.
We are just throwing them all out there today. We don't care. I don't want your life, Neil. All right, listen. We're going to take another quick commercial break coming up. Obviously, later on the show, we got our picks coming up. We got Say What. We got Dude, Are You Serious. We have our picks for the awards for the Major League Baseball season. We got a nice interview with Mike Vaccaro coming up. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. T-Shirt Launcher Inventor.
Mr. T-Shirt Launcher Inventor.
Not satisfied with standard souvenir distribution, you created a device with enough kick to dislocate a mascot's shoulder.
Someone get a stretcher.
Courtside, luxury box, upper deck. Your high-powered cotton cannon makes every section the nosebleed section.
Hit the deck!
So simple, anyone can operate it. After a background check, a training course, and a 5-day waiting period.
It only shoots T-shirts.
So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, marksman of the mezzanine, because we know you'll give us the shirt off your back at 180 feet per second.
Mr. T-Shirt Launcher and
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
All right, we are back with the Tri-State Sports Guys. Good show so far. Number to call is always 347-637-2306. You could always check us out on tristatesportsguys.com, facebook.com/tristatesportsguys, or at tristate_sports. All right, we got to talk a little bit about baseball. The National League is all wrapped up. You know, the Pirates and the Reds both lost today, so it looks like they are not going to catch the Cardinals. So they're going to be playing in that one-game playoff, which will be exciting. They're going to be battling for home field this weekend to see who hosts that game. The American League is still open. I mean, last night, the Indians' heroics, when you watched, the game was on MLB Network. I don't know if you were watching Giambi's home run. It was awesome to watch.
I actually heard about it watching the Yankees game.
Is that right?
Yeah. I was watching the Yankees-Tampa Bay game, and they mentioned how, 42?
Yeah.
42 years old. He just went yaya, and it was his 10th career walk-off homer.
Yeah.
He's a guy, really.
He's got 10 home runs this year.
I know, and I could say this. I'm going to sound like a hypocrite. You were asking about being hypocritical before. He's one of the steroid guys that I look at and go, I like that dude. I like him.
Yeah.
I don't know why. It's like, I don't know if he's just like a pleasant guy. He seems like a nice dude that you could have a beer with and kid with. I thought it was great, dude. I hope Cleveland does the whole thing. I think that'd be awesome for baseball. I really do.
Yeah, I mean, it was. I wasn't a huge Cleveland believer
No.
going to the season, and they made some moves. They made the trade. that brought over a bunch of guys. You know, they traded away too, and they brought, you know, back Stubbs and some other guys, and then they get Michael Bourne, who's been a disappointment for all the Met fans, me included. I wanted to get him. I didn't think he was worth the money they gave him. I thought if the Mets can get him for 2 or 3 years, and I'd written an article about on the site for it, then it was worth it. But the guy's hitting like 260 with an on-base percentage just over 300. He's not worth the kind of money he's getting paid.
How are our picks doing?
Yeah, our picks. We're good. I can't wait to get to our picks because our picks are killing it.
Yeah,
but they put. I mean, they you know, they put together a staff that I didn't believe in. They're one guy who I thought you can count on. Masterson's been hurt a lot this season, but you got Abaldo Jimenez has found himself in the second half of the year. He's been great. He's got an ERA like under 2 in the second half. Chris Perez stinks. You look at them and you're like, with that staff. With the guys that they tried to put together, they tried to get Brett Myers. He never panned out. They had Daisuke Matsuzaka in the minor leagues. They never brought him up. They thought maybe he could give him something. Scott Kazmir has shown some glimpses, actually, of being a major league pitcher again, but still, it's not like he's a great pitcher. You know, they got the guy McAllister who's going tomorrow. Decent, but, like, you know, how are they doing it? You know, in a tough division, how are they doing it? They're right there. They're in the playoffs right now. The season ended.
Do you think there's anybody in Boston that – I know they're having a great year, but anybody that trashed Francona – when he left unceremoniously, going like, this son of a gun could coach, and we all trash this guy.
Yeah,
I'm not giving him all the credit.
No, but you got to give him all
well,
the credit.
But I got to be honest, dude, and I've been wrong about a million things. Like, I pick Idaho football games.
I know, you've
done this
for 4 weeks. You've been
wrong
about everything.
I can't pick a game right. But all I'll say is I really always believe Francona's an excellent manager.
I did too. And we said it on the show. I said it that it was stupid that, you know, you're going to judge – his whole career with the Red Sox based on the final month of this class.
Guys eating chicken and drinking beer.
Yeah.
Which, really, they're adults. They should know a little bit better.
You look at the Red Sox this year, you don't think they're drinking beer? Everybody's got a big, burly beard.
They're punting beers into the crowd.
What's that?
They're punting beers into the crowd.
Yeah, they don't care. I mean, it's amazing. But so you look at them. And you say, this is a team that's so easy to root for. And you look at Tito Francona, and you got to give him a ton of credit. And you know, the way it's shaping out right now, you know, they're going to have that one-game playoff. And if they win that, they're going to face the Red Sox.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how great is that?
If you're a fan of baseball who roots for a big market team like we do, and your team's not in it, which our teams rarely are, and you can't root for Cleveland, then I'm completely puzzled.
Well, right, exactly.
How you can't root for the smaller market teams. I think stories like Cleveland, Tampa, Pittsburgh, you know, ball clubs like that, Oakland, I think those things are great, and I'll root for them against anybody. Really, other than my team, I'll root for those guys against anybody. I think it makes for good storylines, and, you know, it's very exciting. Neil, I don't think you were here the week that we made our picks on the wild card. Did you have anybody in mind? Because I know I took Baltimore and Mike took the Yankees. Was there anybody like 2 weeks ago or so that you thought, you know, was going to be the pick?
I mean, I was pulling for Cleveland and Kansas City. I mean, you know, Kansas City's kind of in that Pittsburgh, you know, spot where they haven't been to the postseason in a long time. And, you know, I'm actually happy to see Pittsburgh, you know, make the playoffs after a 21-year drought. And so, yeah, it was kind of, you know, if I had to pick between Cleveland and Kansas City, I was going to go with Kansas City. But I'm just as happy to see Cleveland. Strictly because Major League, the movie.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right, well, sticking with the playoff talk and moving over to the Bronx, it's been a disappointing ending for the New York Yankees. I mean, they had it right in their grasp. And I know they weren't supposed to be there, but they were there, and they choked down the stretch. But we want to get into some more Yankee talk. I mean, it is the farewell season of Mariano Rivera. If you haven't noticed by the various ceremonies throughout the country, this year, you might have heard the rumor that Mariano Rivera is retiring. But we have on the Tucci Lumber Hotline right now, great guest from the New York Post, wrote a great article about a possible name change of a street in New York. Mike Vaccaro. Mike, are you with us?
I'm here.
Well, thanks for joining us, Mike. Now, you wrote a great article, and it actually sparked a huge debate, and I was a little surprised at the passion on both sides of this about changing River Avenue to Rivera Avenue. I think it's a great idea, but there's passionate people who think it should happen, and there's people that are like, you know, just appalled by the idea, which is insane to me. You're talking about it's not a street that was named after some dignitary or some statesman. It was River Avenue. Talk a little bit about how that came about. I mean, in your article, you mentioned a guy looking at River Avenue and saying, hey, it's two letters away from being Rivera Safe. Is that really how this started? Was it that organic?
Well, yeah, it really was. Tom Ferrara is the name of the guy that I talked about in my column, and he was a guy who he called an epiphany of just kind of looking at the street and saying, you know what? And he just it was like kind of playing Scrabble. And he saw what happened if he added a couple of letters. And I'll tell you what's interesting is almost exactly at the same time I got an email from him, I was followed on Twitter by somebody who was trying to have the same thing. You know, and I'm going to forget the entirety of the address, but it was essentially 161st Ribera Avenue, I think, was the Twitter the Twitter handle. And you know, it was interesting because I literally got both those things at the same time. To the point where I figured I just assumed for a while that one was the same as the other until. Tom is a little bit older, and he said, I really don't even know what Twitter is. So so I thought that was kind of interesting that, you know, I'll say this. I mean, after I wrote it, yeah, there was definitely some people who were, you know, were angry. People were always going to be angry. But here's part of the problem is when you try and apply sports to the real world, people want to say, well, you know, what's a baseball player? And, you know, we tend to forget that not everybody in the world is consumed by baseball the way we are, the way sports fans are. And people get the idea of naming a street after somebody, and they think it should be a war hero, they think it should be a president. And you know, look, I'll say this: if River Avenue was Main Street, I probably wouldn't advocate making the switch. But there is a quirk of geography and a quirk of the fact that Mariano played his entire career on River Avenue. And the fact is that, look, I mean, you want to go a little deeper. I mean, he's an immigrant from Panama, and this is a melting pot city, and you can go on and on. I think it would be kind of a neat thing to do. I still feel that way. And, you know, there do seem to be some people, some politicians and so forth, who think it's an idea. So if, you know, that's how things get done, especially in this town.
Well, yeah, exactly. And I think your point is well taken. I mean, you're not renaming something after George Washington, or you're not renaming Broadway something that's known throughout the world of a famous street. It's River Avenue. And so I just find it fascinating that people just want to complain about just for the sake of complaining. I mean, I'm not a Yankee fan. None of us in the studio are. We're, you know, so it's not like I'm a big Mariano fan, but I think it's a great a gesture, and it's not an acknowledgement to me. It's so much as to how great of a person Mariano has been, and he clearly has been. But it's an acknowledgement of this last 20 years and how big the Yankees and this run has been to New York City. And, you know, 100 years from now, people say, who's Mariano Rivera? And you look back to this run they went on, and at this point, it's a part of New York history. So I find it fascinating, this outrage. But so, I've read some follow-up articles on it. I know it's got some traction on the city council. I mean, what's the next step? Who is it? What's the way a street name gets changed? I mean, does it have to be some city ordinance? Who votes on it? How does it get changed?
Yeah, city council has to officially agree to listen to the to the proposal, and if they pass it, then essentially it's in the mayor's hands. The mayor can say yay or nay. There are some guidelines. One of the guidelines is that the person in question is supposed to be dead, although that has been waived before. William Mays has a couple of streets named after him, and up near where the Polo Grounds used to be, and Ed Koch lived long enough to see the 59th Street Bridge renamed the Ed Koch Bridge. So, I mean, there are exceptions. There could be an exception here if they wanted to. And look, River Avenue, you know, in the grand scheme of things, is actually a very short street. I mean, it only runs from the river, of course, to about 25 or so blocks. And it's not known for being by the river. It's known for being the place where Yankee Stadium exists. And you know, it's look, I probably would feel the same way if Yankee Stadium had been. Had been located on Mantle Boulevard, you know, M-A-N-T-E-L, you know, rename it. I mean, it's that kind of thing. I mean, it just seems to be a kind of a perfect storm of a building, a location, a history, and the name of the street.
Mike, this is Dan Santarella here. I heard some comments regarding Rivera that Dennis Eckersley made, kind of saying that even throwing himself in there as a Hall of Fame closer, that a lot more of the credit should go to those seventh and eighth inning guys, you know, that come in men on base and stuff like that. I don't know if you heard those comments, but do you give any credence to that, that he's almost downplaying the role of a closer, saying that the setup guys should get more credit than they do, or more than even the closer does?
Which is ironic coming from Dennis Eckersley, because he's the guy who essentially, with the help of his manager, Tony La Russa, kind of redefined what we think of a closer. He's the guy who kind of makes guys like Goose Gossage their blood boiled, because you know Eckersley was kind of the prototype for you know being a reliever who comes in and gets three outs, sometimes four, sometimes five, whatever. But it's interesting that he would be the guy who would say that. I think Mariano would say the same thing. I mean, I think Mariano has always been has always had a great relationship with a set of men because he knows how they've been they're the bridge from the starting pitcher to him. He always had a good relationship with Jeff Nelson and Mike Stanton. He has one now with David Robertson, and I think he fully would agree that he's been very adamant about reminding people that this while he enjoys being honored and he enjoys being able to bring his message to people, he's not a one man team, never has been. And there's probably nothing more useless than a good closer on a bad team, right? I mean, if he didn't have the opportunities over the years, because the Yankees were always kind of winning 60-62% of their games and winning a lot in October, then Mariano wouldn't be Mariano. So, I mean, he's a product of the Yankees winning a lot. And so he's a product not only of great setup, but he's a product of, Derek Jeter and Tino Martinez and Paul O'Neill, all the great Yankee hitters who were able to get the Yankees leads over the time. So I think from that standpoint, I think Eckersley has a point. I think Mariano will be the first guy to stand in line and say he has a point.
Yeah, I just find it amazing because Gossage has said the same stuff, and it just seems like this should be some fraternity that these guys stick together. We interviewed Ernie Banks last week. We asked him about Jeter. He couldn't say enough nice things about him. And then you get a guy like Gossage and a guy like Eckersley trashing these guys. And I mean, I'm not a Yankee fan either, but I think Rivera is just a class act, best closer of all time. And every time I look up, some former closer has something to say about somebody and how it's not that tough a job. I just find that amazing that they don't stick together more. They seem like the only position on the field that they don't defend each other.
Well, I mean, I can understand Gossage and guys of that ilk because their job as a fireman is a lot different. I mean, Gossage would come in, sometimes get nine outs. That's just the way the job was, really until Eckersley came along. Here's the thing about closers about specifically about Mariano is that, I think you as much as you can appreciate his body of work and as much as just looking at his numbers and as often as you've seen him, plow through batting orders late in games, how valuable he is. I mean, you're really going to be able to, I think, judge his value most in his absence. And I think, whatever team you root for, I guarantee you have three or four closers right at the top of your head. They makes you shake your head that pitch for your team because you can name every important save they blew. Trevor Hoffman is considered, maybe the second greatest relief pitcher of all time, and I defy anybody to remember an important save he ever got. it's a job that's probably best appreciated when someone who does it well is no longer doing it at all. Last year the Yankees survived. Soriano had a very good year. But trying to do that over the course of time, just look across town at the adventures the Mets have had going through John Franco and Armando Benitez and Billy Wagner and on and on. And that tells you, what that job is and that you appreciate it more when that person is no longer doing it, I think.
Yeah, I think obviously that's a great point to make. People take for granted what he's done. It's been amazing. Now, the last question I have for you is, obviously, this story, the renaming of River Avenue, is going to be one of many off-season storylines for the New York Yankees. I mean, you've got, what are they going to do with Jeter? Are they going to go out and get a shortstop? You've got, how are they going to replace the guys they're losing in their rotation? There's a million different things. Joe Girardi, is he going to stay? A-Rod, all the steroid stuff. So as a writer and as a guy who covers the Yankees, I mean, what's the storyline you look forward to covering and following the most this offseason when it comes to the New York Yankees?
Well, the two most important ones, they aren't necessarily enjoyable. I think the Rivera Avenue one is the one that's going to be most enjoyable, and unfortunately, at least from those who want it to happen, I think it's probably going to be kind of on the back burner when you're talking about the Yankees because they do have a lot of important decisions to make. I think the two that really are going to define the offseason, one of them is going to be what's going to happen to Alex Rodriguez, obviously, and that ties directly into the second one, which is, are they committed to this $189 million payroll? And if they are, then you're talking about entering next year probably looking in a full-blown rebuilding mode, especially if they re-sign Robinson Cano for $20, $25, $30 million, whatever that will occupy of the salary space next year. And, I think, it's going to matter a lot what happens with A-Rod, because if they're able to take, you know, 50%, 75%, however much of his salary off of their bottom line, that's going to allow them to make a better team. So that's the kind of intrigue that teams have never had before. And when you add the fact that the Yankees have never had a budget before, and, you know, if they really are planning on trying to keep this under $189 million, they're going to certainly approach things a lot differently this year than they ever have in the past.
I'm with you. I think that the $189 million cap is the most fascinating story when it comes to the Yankees, and that then leads into Robinson Cano. I think they'd be crazy if they don't re-sign him and outbid everybody else. But, Mike, I really appreciate your time calling in on a late Wednesday night. Keep up the good work. We'll be following this story. You're right. It'll be a fun story. I hope it keeps in the headlines. So I appreciate your time.
Great talking to you guys. Have a good night.
All right. Thank you very much. That's Mike Vaccaro from the New York Post. We like the New York Post. They gave us some love, right? We use their spreads when we do our picks.
My favorite paper for years.
They got the good back covers. Everybody tried
yeah.
to – I should have asked them how the back cover – I just envision like a group of guys at the end of the day with just like a couple 30 racks just like coming up with crazy ideas for what their headline's going to be.
I always heard it was the editor.
On his own? Yeah, I
don't
know
if that's true or not, but that's what I've always believed, that there's one little seedy character sitting in a dark room with like a cigar and a bottle of scotch. He just comes up with headlines.
He doesn't speak all day long.
Yeah.
He just comes out,
right.
Gives a quick one-liner, and just kind of goes back into
yeah.
his little cave. Well, that was cool. It's cool to get a perspective of a guy who's got his, you know, boots on the ground there in New York. So
he's a
nice
guy. Nice
Very
guy.
Nice guy. I really appreciate his welcome anytime. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to give our picks for the AL MVP, Cy Young, Rookie of the Year, the whole thing. When we come back with the Tri-State Sports Guys. Back the Tri-State Sports Guys. I mean, if you're not buying that product, I don't know what else you're doing. I mean, that's the best commercial we got going here. It's just a song. I love it. All right. Well, now is the time. I'm not even going to say these are predictions, Neil and Dan, because clearly we're not very strong at predictions. It's just our opinion on what. And some of these are to me not even debatable. Some of them are very debatable. So I kind of want to go through, and I want to hear your guys' opinion first. We're going to start out in the National League, and I'll go over to you, Neil. Who do you got National League Rookie of the Year? Because this is a very tough one, in my opinion.
I mean, I don't understand how you don't go with Puig on this, right?
Well, look, Puig, and you know we've been in love with Puig since before he got called up. We were in love with him in spring training when he hit 500. But you can't just, like, you know, not give Jose Fernandez any credit. I mean, that guy, this side of Clayton Kershaw, you could say he had as good of a season as Matt Harvey, who we were talking about as Cy Young, and this guy's a rookie. And kind of came out of, I mean, everybody knew about him. But I don't think anybody knew this guy was going to be that type of pitcher on a terrible ball club to just take a team on his back, and it became must-win television. So I think you got to give serious consideration to Jose Fernandez. But so Puig is your pick, though, and you think it's clear-cut over Fernandez?
I mean, no, you got a valid point. I mean, Fernandez was pretty much lights out for the majority of the season, but I don't know that he captured, enough headlines in my mind, you know, to surpass Puig. I mean, Puig was just a storyline since the day he put on a uniform, and it's just been constantly causing waves everywhere. And I know you can go strictly by the numbers. It's kind of tough with a pitcher versus batter, but, my vote's for Puig.
Dan, who do you got?
Well,
National League Rookie of the Year.
I think Puig wins it. That's what I think is going to happen. I understand the argument for Fernandez. And the guy that I was really thinking about today, because his team is right in the thick of a pennant race, is Shelby Miller, and I'm a Cardinals disliker, is the proper way to put it. But I mean, I often wonder when you start talking about these things, does it matter how good the guy's team is in most people's opinion? Because to me, it kind of does, because Jose Fernandez is a phenom, and he was kind of overshadowed by the whole Harvey Mania deal this year. But
yeah,
he's an outstanding pitcher. What's he, 20 years old?
Yeah, phenomenal.
But Shelby Miller's pitching in meaningful games in St. Louis, and I don't think he'll even get consideration. I think he'll finish third, and you got the Ryu guy out with LA that'll probably finish fourth or fifth, whatever. But I think Puig wins it, and if I was voting, I would vote for Shelby Miller. As a guy who cannot stand the Cardinals,
yeah,
I'm just saying, you're pitching in the thick of a pennant race. He's got,
15 wins. 15th today.
His ERA is like a run higher than Fernandez's. But what I'm saying is you just can't help but wonder, what would Fernandez do if he's pitching in the heat, like right in the thick of it? I think he'd still be great.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, that's the guy I would vote for, but I think Puig wins.
Yeah, I think Shelby Miller is an interesting pick. I mean, when he was – it started out the season unbelievable. I mean, an ERA sub 2 for a while, a WHIP sub 1, winning games, and I do lend a lot of credence to the fact that he was doing it for a team in the heat of a pennant race in the most competitive division in all of baseball this year. But, you know, he finishes up with an ERA over 3, 15 wins, 15-9 I think he finished with. I'm going to go with Puig, again, because I think, to the same point you're making about Miller, I mean, this guy took a team that was dead and
absolutely
gave it life.
Yeah.
And I know people say, well, his numbers trailed off. This guy's still batting 325 with 20 home runs or whatever he's doing. I mean, it's not like this guy's, you know, it's fallen, you know, crashed down to earth. This guy's not hitting 400, but he's not going to keep that up. But this guy still comes up with big hits, making plays in the field. And I think when I look back at this season, as great as Jose Fernandez of this group, when you look at his career 15 years from now, might be the best. I mean, he could turn into, because we know what the Marlins do. They are bad for a few years, and then they figure out a way, and they got some tools there. They got Stanton. They got that guy Yelich I like. And, you know, they'll make a couple moves. There's some other guys, and all of a sudden the Marlins are back, and then they're behind their frontline starter. So, but I think if I were to go with this, it's Yasiel Puig, but of all of these debates, I think the NL Rookie of the Year race is the most interesting, because you could definitely make a case for those three. As good as Ryu was, I don't think he's up with those three guys, but, I mean, you can make a valid case for all three of those guys. So it's not a slam dunk thing, but, so I'm going Puig. Neil's going Puig. You're going with Shelby Miller. Now, Neil, where are you going in terms of Cy Young for the National League? This shouldn't be very debatable, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be Kershaw, hands down, right?
Yeah, I don't even think we need to spend much time on it. I mean, the season he's had is just insane. I mean, this guy should have 22, 23 wins, except he's lost a million 1-0 games.
Yeah.
You get an ERA in this day and age with under 2 and a WHIP under 1. It gives you length. I think he's leading the league in innings. It's insane the season he's had. I mean, we don't even need to really debate this, right? I mean,
no, I got Kershaw, and you know, like what you just said, if Kershaw was on the Cardinals this year with some runs aboard or Cincy or something like that, he might have 22 wins, 23 wins. I mean, he's a cut above. I heard some rumblings on ESPN that I don't know if they were just spitballing, but some people mentioned Greinke. And finally, Mark Mulder brought everybody down to earth going, he's not even the best pitcher on his team.
Exactly.
You know, but I mean, people are reaching.
They just want to make it.
Yeah,
like, that's what we always talk about. People need to hear themselves talk.
If he's not unanimous, I think that would be
insane.
Shocking.
It would be insane.
Yeah.
So we don't need to keep talking about that. NL MVP, this is one where there is not a clear-cut case for who's going to be the MVP. Neil, who do you got for NL MVP?
Oh, boy. I think I kind of want to go. I mean,
David Wright, maybe.
I know. I mean, to me, it's between what? McCutcheon, Votto, and what? Goldschmidt, maybe?
Goldschmidt,
I feel like I got to go with McCutcheon on this one. I know that he probably doesn't have the amount of numbers that Votto and Goldschmidt do, but I just get caught up in that Pittsburgh fever.
Yeah, I think that McCutcheon wins, but I'm not completely sold on it. Dan, who are you going with?
Well, you and I were talking off air, and I asked if it was who we would vote for. Okay, now, for Goldschmidt, I know he has a phenomenal year going and everything like that. I just have always felt like an MVP should be on a playoff team. That's just my theory, you know. And the guy, if you're going to talk about the most valuable player to his team in the National League, and I know he was hurt and he missed some games or whatever, but Yadier Molina, there's nobody more valuable to any team, arguably in the big leagues, than Yadier Molina. Because when he doesn't catch, you're talking about Tony Cruz.
Yeah, that's
so that's the guy, and again, I'm going to take heat from the Cubs fans I know. I'm talking about Shelby Miller.
Cardinals fan.
I love my
guy.
I would vote for Yadier Molina. I don't think if
he's
you're
putting
talking,
the jinx on him.
What's that?
He's putting the jinx on him. It's a reverse con. I can smell it from a mile away.
I wish.
My
I
old
wish
co-host used to pull that move.
I wish it was. That's who I would vote for. But in reality, I agree with you. I think I McCutcheon's probably the pick, and I think it would be great. Even though the Cubs are in their division, I've always liked the Pirates. I like that team. I like their city. I like the way they support the Penguins, the Steelers, the Pirates. I think McCutcheon's the pick, but I would vote for Molina.
I'm actually, and I agree with you. In most cases, I agree that the MVP should go to a team that's a playoff team, or at least like in the hunt towards the end of the year. But I'm going with Paul Goldschmidt because I think that's a tiebreaker type thing, but it's not the all end all be all. When you look at a guy who's leading the league in home runs, leading the league in RBI, leading the league in OPS, leading the league in slugging percentage. This guy is, you know, when he came up, he had all this hype around him. He had some success. But this year, I mean, this guy is the preeminent power hitter in the National League. I think McCutcheon winds up winning it because I think a lot of voters vote the way you do. And I don't have any problem with it. I do think this is a tough I don't know. I mean, Molina's a guy I hadn't really given a lot of thought to. I agree with you. If you want to look at just straight terms of, like, most valuable player, and maybe if you, if all the players were in the playoff pool and you could just pick from a draft, like, you know, like a Sandlight draft, people might pick Yadier Molina over anybody when it comes to hitters. But I'm looking at this season. I'm saying it's got to be Paul Goldschmidt. You put up two-thirds of the Triple Crown and do it the way he's doing it. He's my guy, but it's very debatable, and I understand the arguments that both of you guys made. I'm not a huge Goldschmidt guy.
I just think the old Ralph Kiner adage, when he went in for a pay raise with the Pittsburgh Pirates in like 1950, and they just lost 95 games, he went in for like a $3,000 pay raise, and they told him, we lost 95 games with you, you can take a hike, and we'll lose 95 games without you. So I agree with you, Goldschmidt's got stupid numbers, but I just feel like, what are you valuable for if your team doesn't make the playoffs? What are you valuable for? It's not the best player. It's not the guy who said that. I understand your point. I'd have no problem with somebody voting for Paul Goldschmidt. All I'm saying is it's the most valuable player, which I hate. I hate that terminology. I think it should just be the best player because that's how people vote, it seems.
But let's not make it like the Diamondbacks are the Chicago Cubs. They are over 500.
Hey.
Well, I can make fun of Chicago Cubs. They stink.
You cannot. You can't make fun of anybody but yourself.
I sure am. I'm showing off the gun. They still got them, dude. They got 80 wins this year.
No,
they're
I just
finished over 500. Where would they be without him?
I don't. I would.
They would be in.
I wouldn't fault
the
someone.
San Diego Padres.
I wouldn't fault somebody for voting for him. I just said that.
I want you to change your vote.
I won't do it until you put sleeves on. Until you put sleeves on, I won't do that.
Well, they're at a standstill because
yeah,
these guns
fine.
Are out, and they can't pull back in.
I'm a little nervous. I'm not gonna lie.
All right. Well, let's transition over to the American League, Neil. You want to talk about one where it's kind of a reach to pick one, and you get this a lot with the rookies of the year, but who do you got for AL Rookie of the Year? I mean, I got one I think it's kind of clear-cut, but it's kind of like the best of what they have to offer. Who do you got for AL Rookie of the Year?
You can't go wrong with Will Myers, right?
Well, that's who I'm thinking, Will Myers. I mean, he didn't come up till the end of June. They were talking about it during the Yankee game last night about their record. They were three games over 500 when he came up and where they are now. And, he came out with this all kinds of hype. I mean, anybody who – I know Danny luckily is not a fantasy guy, but anybody that follows fantasy baseball, I mean, last year all you heard about was when he comes up, what kind of stud he's going to be and the kind of prolific power numbers he had. And he's actually a better hitter than I thought he would be. I think I said 300, I believe, still. He's got power, but, you know, he's got the no batting gloves. He just looks like, you know.
Big fan.
Yeah, just a lunch pail guy. And, he doesn't have, like, knock your socks off numbers. But I can't imagine that there's somebody else in the American League that you want to put up there with him. Do you have one?
No. I mean, when I looked over everything and I started looking at guys like J.B. Shuck, and then I just had to wake myself up. You know what I mean?
Calhoun out in Anaheim?
I mean, another guy, I think Will Myers is the pick. Another guy that, you know, really no one talks about. He's got 22 starts or whatever it is for Tampa. It's Chris Archer, and he's 9-7 with the ERA in the threes, and you know it's a pretty good pitcher. I wouldn't vote for him.
I think
just throwing a name out there.
Tampa Bay young pitchers, they just get like overlooked because like, oh yeah, Tampa Bay's got another
got more
great
pitching.
Arm.
It's like Atlanta 20 years ago. Like you know,
it's like, oh, yeah,
another
guy. Oh,
yeah.
Matt Moore, yeah, he's,
right.
You know, he's good. He'll win 15 games. We also got Archer. You know, Hellickson is like a spot starter. He'd
right.
be the ace of the Mets right now. yeah, I mean,
yeah, Myers is the pick for me.
Yeah, Myers is the guy. Myers is the guy. All right, so who do you got for Cy Young in the American League? Again, not an open and shut case, although a lot of people are making it. Neil, who do you got?
Well, okay, so the contenders are Scherzer, Cologne, Darvish, and, Masterson, maybe, Shields. You know my take on Darvish. I think he's a flash in the pan. I think Cologne's a steroid head, so I'm going to go with Scherzer.
Yeah, I mean, Darvish put up stupid strikeout numbers early on. And I thought he was going to be a shoo-in for the Cy Young, but he had a lull where they were not winning games. He didn't win a game for like a month at one point. I think he's got 270 or so Ks, which is big time Ks. But I'm going to go with Scherzer too. Although I think he's one of the luckier 20-3 pitchers we've ever seen. He's still got a WHIP under one and an ERA around three in the American League. Bartolo Colon leading the league in ERA, which is very good. I think he's got 15 or so wins, which is obviously very good. But he pitches in a park that's very pitcher-friendly. I mean, the foul territory, it's like playing at Vets Park in Norwalk. I think it's got to be Scherzer. But I can listen to arguments for other people. I just think, because it's not like this guy, it's not Clayton Kershaw. He's 20-3, though, and he's got a good ERA. It's not like he's a lucky – I mean, what do you think?
Scherzer's the pick. I mean, you win 20 games. You know, he pitches in a fairly pitcher-friendly ballpark, too. And, I mean, you win 20 games and you're the only guy.
It's only 420 in center.
That's right. That's nothing for you. I can see the guns right now.
I'm just showing them off. I'm not even flexing. That's how big my arms are.
Absolutely. No, I don't think I can condone anybody voting for anybody but Scherzer. I know Darvish has the 270 strikeouts, the 205, 6, 7 innings pitch, whatever it is.
Cologne.
I like Neil, by the way.
At him because he's fat and old. But the guy's got a 2.8 ERA with a lot of wins.
Neil called him a steroid head, and that's a man after my own heart. You know I hate the PEDs.
I know you do.
I would never vote for him. He weighs 800 pounds.
As you could tell by Cleveland's shirt, I don't hate the PEDs.
You don't. You're on.
This doesn't happen naturally, my man.
I can tell.
And I'm sure Neil can see my farmer's tan as well, which is another. That's just an added bonus. You're getting on the Google Hangout. AL MVP. Neil, who do you got AL MVP-wise? I mean, it looked like a slam dunk for Cabrera, you know, a month and a half ago, but, you know, he got injured, and he hasn't had an extra base hit in like 10 games. I mean, did he lose his spot as MVP, or are you still giving it to him?
Yeah, I mean, as much as I really, really, really want Mike Trout to get it, I think Cabrera just edges him out, just barely, because, I mean,
stop.
And, you know, I mean, Mike Trout, I'm in love with Mike Trout. I'm not afraid to say it.
Jersey, I'm from Jersey. I have a beach house on the Jersey Shore. I get it, dude. You're from New Jersey. I get it. And so is Mike Trout. Awesome. Move on to Norwalk.
Here's where the playoff discussion comes into hand, right? Comes into play. If the Orioles for some miracle make the playoffs, which it won't happen, isn't Chris Davis at the forefront of the running, do you think?
Well, that's the rub there. I mean, I think if the Orioles make the playoffs, I could see changing my vote because the Orioles are nowhere without Chris Davis. And I love Adam Jones. I've talked about how much he's probably my favorite non-Met in the major leagues right now. I love the guy. They get home runs out of Hardy. They do, you know, a bunch of different things. Tillman's had a good season in the rotation. But without 52 home runs and 100 and whatever many RBIs the guy's got, the Orioles are nowhere. I just think I'm still giving it to Miguel Cabrera because they are a playoff team. The guy's got two-thirds of the Triple Crown with a 347 batting average. And, you know, when it was the dog days of summer and, you know, they were separating themselves, they were just like, hey, Miguel, just carry us here in the middle of the summer so that we could separate ourselves and set up our rotation. And he just went and did that and just hit home runs every game. And it was just – he's so far and above the best player in the game – I can't imagine he's not the most valuable player for that. What do you think, Dan?
100%. I mean, Mike Trout might be from New Jersey, but guess what else he is? He's not even on my list. He's not even on my list. I love the way that kid plays the game. The guys I had on my list, truthfully, were Cabrera. I had Davis on my list, and I had Cano on my list. Because in a year where they were just riddled with injuries, he was the shining star in that lineup, you know what I mean? But I can't make any argument against Cabrera.
Yeah.
I mean, even the Orioles have no shot, and anybody that picked them to win the wild card is an idiot.
Well, exactly.
So,
remember how good we were? Like, this show used to be the place to go predictions about, like, 6 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And ever since then, this is where, yeah. I mean, the
I came on board.
Ratings are in the tank.
Yeah, we're awful.
I mean, all we've got is Ernie Banks.
That's it.
We did a favor for Ernie.
Yeah.
And that's all we've got. Maybe Ernie will chime in later on and tell us his thoughts about Dan Santarelli. But I think Cano's an interesting pick because, I mean, God, if I had more time with Mike Vaccaro, I would ask him, like, what he possibly thinks about Yankee fans hating on Robinson Cano. I mean, there are people, Yankee fans that I know and are big baseball fans that are like, let Cano go. He's not worth the money. You know, we didn't start winning until we got Soriano or this guy and this guy. Well, yeah, you started winning some – because before that, all you had was Cano hitting 300 with, you know, 30 home runs and doing all these things and playing gold glove second base. I mean, I don't think there's anybody that holds a candle to him at second base. And everybody wants to talk about how he looks nonchalant. The guy is unbelievable at second base.
You could make the argument that he is the best all-around player at his own position than anybody in the game. I mean, he does every phase of the game.
Yep.
He doesn't have a lot of speed, and he also doesn't friggin' hustle a lot. But, you know, I digress. He might be the best all-around player at his own position in the whole game.
Yeah.
The glove, the arm, the pivot, the bat speed, yeah. The homers, the gaps, the gap power he's got.
Homer,
hitting gap.
I mean, just hand, yeah. It goes the other way.
You just got to run. Just run out ground
who
ball.
Who cares?
I do, and you know I do.
I do, too. Look, I'm a guy who hustles. Every ball, I've got a million in front.
Yeah, but why doesn't he? Why does Dustin Pedroia, who's an excellent ball player, is an MVP. He might have, like, what, 60% the talent of Robinson Cano? And why would I rather have Dustin Pedroia on my team?
I wouldn't.
I've argued that Cano's a better player. There's no question about
still
that.
Still rather have Cano.
But he's a dirt dog. He just plays the game the right way. And I wonder how Cano can watch him in those 18-19 Boston-New York matchups and not go, Jesus God, I'm better than this guy. Why don't I just show everybody how to play the game the right way? Why does he have to be so lazy? It's disgusting.
I can't.
And I just can't.
It doesn't bother me.
I find it stomach turning.
It doesn't. I don't know why it doesn't bother me. It just doesn't. And I'm a guy who, if I was like a coach, it would piss me off.
Absolutely.
But as a fan, I don't think it takes away from him. I don't think it makes me want him less on my team. It, as a New York Met fan, if both those guys are free agents and money's equal and everything, I'm taking Cano or Pedroia.
Dude, I don't blame you. I'm not saying he's a better player. I'm just saying I like the way he plays the game, and he's excellent. He's an excellent ball player. He's not Robinson Cano. But if I'm looking at it with my mindset, and you know how I get about certain things, and I'm looking at it going, Dustin Pedroia is 4 feet tall.
Yep.
He's 110 pounds.
He's Rudy Rudiger.
He does everything right. He does everything right.
He doesn't mess around with his chew either. That's a plus.
Wow, and I love the beard.
I mean,
I love how he bails out and still rips balls down the right field line. I think it's beautiful.
Yeah, I don't know. Hey, Ernie, you got anything to check in on? Got Ernie Banks on the line? Maybe he could check in with a little, like his thoughts on what he thinks about my opinion as opposed to Dan's opinion about Dustin Pedroia and Robinson Cano.
Dan is a great guy. You all should put a statue of him right out in front of that station. Dan is a remarkable person because he grew up
with the Cubs. With the Cubs. I love that man.
Because he grew up. I mean, can we just digress for a minute and talk about how cool that was last week to just talk to, I mean, most people didn't hear it. It was just us talking to Ernie Banks. But, I mean, I'm going to say right now, after the experience of Ernie Banks waiting on hold as we dealt with our issues, handled our issues, answered every question.
Absolutely.
Said, like, he didn't have a bad thing to say about anyone.
No.
We could have asked him about O.J. Simpson, and he would have been, I love O.J. Simpson. He didn't care. I mean, right now. No offense, Mo Vaughn. He's my favorite athlete of all time.
He should be, and I'm going to tell you.
My favorite athlete of all time after last week.
I'm going to tell you a true story. The next day, I get a call from a buddy of mine, and he goes, dude, that was unbelievable, the interview with Ernie Banks. He goes, what was it like to interview him? You know what I told him? I go, I don't think I did. I go, I believe 100% that Mike did, but I don't think I had anything to do with it. I was still like, I was just here.
You blacked
floating
out.
Floating above the ground while Ernie Banks was telling me how awesome I am, and clearly he doesn't know me. But he was so excited about me. And I'm nobody. 512 homers. He's telling me how great I am.
He spent, you look at it all the time, he spent on hold on the phone. This guy spent 45 minutes with us.
Yeah.
On a Wednesday night.
Yeah.
In Chicago. A lot of things to do in Chicago.
82 years young. Your article was beautiful about him. He's a beautiful man. And I thought that before, and now he's just elevated to new heights in my mind, which I didn't even think was possible. Because I always thought he was my favorite Cub, even more so than like Sandberg or Mark Grace growing up. That guy is just, he's the perfect person.
It's not to be like over the top, like philosophical about this, but don't you think like, think about when you're a jerk to somebody.
Yeah.
We've all been jerks to people.
Ernie's not.
And we're nobody.
No.
I mean, there's nothing you've done in your life that is better than anything he's done in his life.
No.
There's not one aspect of you, me, or Neil that's better than any aspect of Ernie Banks. And he was just like the nicest guy you could. Oh, Derek Jeter? Derek Jeter's the best guy there is.
Yeah.
Robinson Cano, he's a great player. How about Starlin Castro?
Yeah. You know what I love?
I mean, he's the best. Why can't we be him?
Because we're not that good. Seriously, we saw each other play. I never saw Neil play, but you did. Is Neil as good as Ernie Banks?
Neil is a notch below Ernie Banks.
Yeah, a notch below Ernie Banks. The thing I loved about Ernie was Robinson Cano is a great guy. I've never met him, but he's a great guy. There's people I haven't met that I wish death upon them.
I assume I don't like people.
Yeah, he's just telling me he's great. Although I've never met
him.
I love that man.
They have to win my love.
Absolutely, dude.
He's a great man. I never met him.
No.
He's a great man.
He's
from Puerto Rico.
Yeah. I think he's Dominican, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
Who cares? Ernie's got way more homers than he does.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ernie doesn't even worry about where guys are from.
Anything south of Chicago is Puerto Rico to Ernie Banks.
Right.
I mean, Neil, you got to admit, that was one of the coolest things you've ever been a part of. I mean,
he's all right.
He's not Mike Trout.
Wow.
He doesn't have Mike traps.
Neil,
I get that.
Neil wants to interview Ray Ordonez. That's what Neil wants to do. Asking comment. Ernie Banks is all right. He's the best human being who's ever lived.
He's the best human being I've ever interacted with.
Absolutely.
Say that. There might be better.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I have not met anyone better than him.
And you know what? You never will.
We never.
If you live to be 100,
no.
You won't. And neither will Neil. Neil could be angry and say Ernie's all right. I want to hear it. He wants to interview Rico Bronya.
Yeah. He wants to defend Tom Brady.
He's just upsetting me with that comment. I don't like it one bit.
He wants to get Works Wilson on here and have a nice cry out.
I don't appreciate people blowing smoke up my patoot, and I think he's blowing smoke a little bit.
Oof.
Right. Ernie or me?
Ernie.
Mr. Banks, Mr. Cub, Mr. Sunshine.
Oh, God.
Oh, Lord.
If you're interested, you can email us at tristatesportsfans@gmail.com. We're looking for a Hoboken co-host.
Neil and I got to have a bare-knuckle fist fight.
I mean, if you're here now, I'd be doing solo, just me and Tone doing say what, because...
Or Ernie would Neil up.
Ernie,
he's almost 100.
Ernie's on his way to Broboken right now.
He might be.
He's probably at the gym. They closed on that September 1. All right. Hey, Neil, you got any duty you serious? We only got like a half an hour left, so we got to kind of run through some things here. You got a couple duty you serious before we get to our picks?
Yeah, why not? Well, say what you will about Prince Fielder, but I kind of have a soft spot for him, mostly because he has a lot of soft spots on his body. I don't know if you caught the story about when he was going for a foul ball in the stands and he just helped himself to a fan's nacho.
I did see that, and then I had to see, and I've killed on Don Mattingly in the past. I had to relive Don Mattingly and his popcorn incident. Like that's the biggest thing that happened in Mattingly's career because he never won anything. You know what I mean? It's just I love Prince Fielder. I agree with you 100%. I love how he doesn't care about his figure. He clearly doesn't do Bikram yoga like our co-host Mike here. You know what I mean? I love everything about him. He took a nacho. That's great. But then seeing Mattingly's face again, just all my Yankee friends growing up telling me how great he was stealing the popcorn. It's the only thing he ever won. He won a free handful of popcorn from an 8-year-old in a Yankee game in 1987 while the Yankees were 28 games out of first place.
Say what you want about Victor Miobis.
I will. Go ahead.
You get me and you get Prince Fielder with cutoff t-shirts on. I'll put my Bikram Yoga arms over his any day of the week.
I think so.
Don't you bet your ass you will.
Yeah.
Put that, yeah.
Good for you, buddy. I'm proud of you. I really am.
All right. Neil, what else you got, buddy? Any other food-related sports stories? What do you got?
Oh, food-related. I don't know if I got any of those in the bag, but I do know this. Sunday's Houston Astros baseball game officially drew a 0.0 TV rating in the Houston area.
I had heard that they were drawing 0.04s in Houston. And we talked about Houston being, I think, the fourth biggest media market in America. It's huge. I mean, people don't realize how big Houston is. And they are just – and you know what? They're still the most profitable team, I think, in North American sports, aren't they? They make like $80 million this year or something insane like that.
Yeah, I think they get paid per loss, I believe.
I think they do. It's insane. I don't know why people aren't going out there to see J.D. Martinez.
You know what I heard, seriously?
Jose Altuve?
He's an excellent ball player, but I heard a couple years ago that there's actually a paper mill, I'm not being funny, on the outside of town in Houston that unleashes such a stench, no joke, that the whole town smells like crap. I'm not being funny.
City of Houston?
I swear to God, dude, that I actually read this and then saw a comedian break it down who said, you know, if there was noise that loud as that smell, people would say you got to turn the freaking thing off. So I'm wondering if maybe people, the team stinks.
Yeah.
Maybe they can't decipher between the stench of the team and the paper mill.
Yeah.
But maybe if the roof was open down there at Minute Maid, maybe
it just stinks.
Maybe it just stinks like, I don't
know. Try to get Paul Wall on the phone before the end of the show. We'll get Paul Wall in here to Sprills and see if he might have some insight on the smell of Houston.
Yeah.
That's the foundation for a good Bruce Springsteen or John Cougar Mellencamp song right there.
The Cougar would break that down, dude. You're exactly right. That's Americana right there.
I'll tell you what else stinks. Brett Favre's agent says he can still play. Oh, boy.
He's a little jealous that I think Drew Brees is doing the Wrangler commercials now. Pulls it off a little bit better than old 5-inch Brett Favre.
He's still better than Christian Ponder.
He still really is.
I mean, I don't even want to. Brett Favre, I hated him my whole life, and then I loved him. Now I don't want to hear about him anymore. I'm just exhausted with Vikings quarterbacks. And then I got to see Fran Tarkin do the interview the other day talking about how Ponder's not that bad.
Not that bad.
I don't know if Fran's on black tar heroin. I don't know what Fran's up to now in his advanced age.
He's slightly below Ernie Banks in your
Just a little bit. He's down there below Satan. I don't want to hear anything about the Vikings quarterbacks. Brett Favre.
I, you know what?
He couldn't play 3-4 years ago. He couldn't play.
And my friend, this is long before the show, but my friends will attest to it. I was not a fan of the Jetskin and Brett Favre, even though Boomer and Carton are out there chanting for Favre, because I was the biggest Chad Pennington fan there is, still my favorite Jet. Honestly, and so I was very didn't want to see all that go down, and they got him here, and they missed the playoffs, and all the rest, and yeah, I'm done with Brett Favre, and he's like, he's acting like, I didn't say I would do it, but you know, your agent's just out there on his own. Yeah. Why do you still have an agent, Brett? You know, he lost you the Wrangler deal.
How is Al Toon not your favorite player?
I was young then. I mean. Yeah.
He waved to me at a Jets Chiefs game.
I had an
Al Toon
jersey.
Did you? 88, right?
Yeah, it was 88. That's right. But it was like, we didn't exactly have the authentic jerseys in the pump house. I think it was just a green shirt that said 88 on it, but I rocked it all the time.
In Durham, we had the authentic jerseys.
You had Al Toon's jersey.
We had all, signed by him. Absolutely.
Hey, Dan, I know you're friends with Ernie. Here you go. Hey, you're Ernie's friend, right? It's my jersey from this week. Is that all you got, Neil?
I mean, I was waiting for you to finish up your story about your own Mean Joe Green moment. I thought you were pausing for dramatic effect, but apparently you weren't. So now we're going to move along. We're going to chug along, and I'm going to tell you that if you talk about Christian Ponder stinking, Eli Manning has really stunk, and I'm willing to put my name on that. If he were a member of the California Pop Warner team, and he had been the suffering that loss in that league, his opponent's coach would have suffered a $200 fine. Let me back that up and say that again, because it's probably a little confusing. The California Pop Warner teams will have to pay a $200 fine. The coach will be suspended for 2 weeks if the team wins by more than 35 points.
Well, I will say this as an embarrassment. I blame it on towns like Darien, Connecticut.
That's, do you?
I do.
Mm-hmm.
But Connecticut, I believe, is the only state in the union that in high school football, if you win by more than 50 points, your coach gets suspended for a game, which I think is more embarrassing to have a guy. I mean, if you're losing 49-0 and a guy breaks, some JV guy is playing in the fourth quarter and breaks down a run and stops on the 1 yard line, to me that's more embarrassing than him scoring.
Yep.
But that's a rule. So as much as I'd love to make fun of this Pop Warner League out in California and those hippies out there, Connecticut one-ups it because this is high school football. People are trying to get into college. And they're not getting their stats because, I don't know, some bleeding hearts in Darien won't let it happen.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to glaze
over. Waivers don't want to beat up on Norwalk anymore.
I'm going to glaze over that ridiculous point. But are we ever going to get to the point here where we stop giving trophies to everyone?
I think you start giving winners. I think everybody just gets.
Well, I mean, we all played with guys that stunk.
Yeah.
And that's just the bottom line.
I played with one in college.
Yeah.
He's a middle reliever. He was great, but...
Does he do any online podcasts or anything?
Hey, son of a gun.
No. Different guy.
Yeah, sure.
Just stop pretending that everybody needs to be in the same league. Because, I mean, you know what I mean? If you have a great high school football team here in Connecticut, but don't play an awful team. I understand you're in leagues and stuff like that, but just don't reward everybody like everybody deserves the same placement in our sports society. Then you won't have 75-0 wins. And then if Ohio State stops playing like Florida A&M, they won't have to win 76-0. Play Wake Forest like Army did. Play somebody that's somewhat just, you know, I'm tired of all the stuff where little Johnny's not very good, but he's 12 and he's impressionable and everybody's got to tell him he's the next like Hoyt Wilhelm. And he stinks and he's going to stink. And then he'll have a great job when he's older and the guy who was really good will be working for him or whatever. But stop telling me that like everybody's got to be in the same league. Some kids just aren't good enough. And if they're not good enough in Pop Warner, then don't let them play.
Yeah.
Don't let them play. Make them play soccer.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody plays there.
Yeah. I mean, that's...
Nobody scores.
That's my biased take on everything.
My daughter plays soccer, and she's 2. So there you go.
She's probably nice, though, right?
She's a bruiser. She leads their little team in red cards, I'll tell you that. She's an icebox.
Yeah.
Icebox. I thought he was probably the best baby mama. If we're going to get into baby mamas, let's talk about baby mamas. Let's talk about kids. Let's talk about baby mamas. Bryn Cameron. She's Matt Leinart's baby mama, and now she's Blake Griffin's baby mama. Is this the most famous baby mama in the history of baby mamas?
That's pretty good.
Whore.
Yeah.
Whoa, don't chiming in for the first time tonight.
With just one word explanation.
He doesn't like that. Now, that's the girl who played basketball at USC, right?
Yeah.
She's like a tall, blonde girl.
Yeah.
And Leinart had some relations with her, had a kid, and then decided he just would prefer just to be a backup quarterback the rest of his life.
Yeah.
And then so she went to Blake Griffin. It's a hell of a step up, at least.
It's great. I mean,
upgrade.
What did you say?
Upgrade.
Upgrade.
I mean, not it looks so.
Well, no, I mean...
To her, apparently.
It's like a fetish, the ginger fetish. I get that.
Yeah. Well, all she did was go from a guy who stinks to a guy who doesn't.
A guy who jumps
when
to the
right. Adding in more races, though, they just get more attractive. The more races, the more attractive. That's just how it is.
You ain't lying. Right? I think that's...
Blake Griffin is ugly. Matt Leinart, Matt
Tony's got a man crush right now.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
But, you know, come on.
Yeah.
Come on. You know, better athlete, but...
My Bikram yoga cards look a little more manly after that comment.
Maybe she just wanted to go out with a guy that she could go to his games and actually see him play.
Yeah,
she wanted her to grow up and say, that guy played professional sports.
Yeah, right, yeah.
I get that.
Yeah, that works.
But I tell you what, she's like 6 feet. Played basketball at USC. I don't know if she's any good, but she's good looking. You get that gene pool, that's like the Agassi Graf kid. I mean, who apparently doesn't play tennis.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a huge Blake Griffin fan, but if I had to choose between the better athlete of those two, it's not even close, right?
You get that height.
You get the left-handed gene in there, though. You get a nice southpaw. He might pitch at Johns Hopkins for Coach Bob Babb one day.
He might, and he'll still have no post moves.
No, he won't.
You know, he won't have like a little Tim Duncan bank shot or an Olajuwon drop step.
No.
He'll just be a guy, throw it as high as you can, and I'm going to dunk it.
Yeah.
That's what he'll do.
Pretty much.
Oh, hey.
He's a glorified Sean Kemp.
Come on.
Whoa. You're doing this
right.
No, but I know what I'm talking about.
You don't want to talk about Sean Kemp in front of him. You want to talk about a headlock.
Was he a Sonics fan?
Yeah. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Come on.
That left
show,
swim.
Oh, yeah.
This show has officially left the tracks.
Yeah.
You got anything else, buddy?
Yeah, the Dodgers peed in the pool at the Diamondback Stadium.
They sure did.
I saw that.
They sure did, Neil, and I think it's awesome. Because you know, you remember like the best brawl of the year. This was with coaches out there just fist fighting each other was between those two teams back when the Dodgers stunk and the Diamondbacks were still hanging around first place. And the people that want to make excuses like, oh, they were just celebrating, it was clearly a slap in the face
to
the Arizona Diamondbacks. And I have no problem with it. That's sports, dude. That's sports.
I agree with you. And,
when we beat Brian McMahon High School, I was drinking in the end zone after that.
Were you? You were 21.
When?
No, I didn't say I was drinking alcohol.
Oh, you were drinking soda pops?
A couple Mountain Dews with
my
buddies.
Yeah. Well, if they're looking for somebody like to clean the pool, maybe they get Matt Leinart. He's probably going to be looking for work at some point soon. So maybe they can get Matt Leinart to clean that pool out for him.
Yeah, that's it. It's a good father-son project.
So you're saying you don't have a problem with them dancing around the pool and everything?
I love it.
Do you really?
I honestly have no problem with it. I don't care about I have no problem with it at all. I think it's awesome. And it adds to the rivalry. If you like sports, I like rivalries that are real rivalries. These aren't rivalries like, manufactured, just because the fans don't like each other. We're supposed to pretend, but then at halftime we're over there kissing each other and high-fiving.
Yeah.
These guys genuinely don't like each other. They wound up blowing the doors off the NL West. They happen to do it in their stadium. That's awesome.
I just think
it sucks if you're a Diamondback fan, then go out and do something. I think I think it's awesome.
I just think we were talking before, and I'm, flashing back, but we were talking before about not wanting to show anybody up. And I think when you're the Dodgers franchise, you've got a little bit more tradition than the Diamondbacks. You've won quite a few World Series. You could act like you've been there before. That's all I'm saying. They could have been in the clubhouse having the Corbel champagne and some brews and relaxing. And then, you got guys dancing in the pool and doing swan dives. And I didn't think it was necessary.
They give them a pool at their
that's stupid, but
stadium.
I'm not going to hate on them,
Lake Havasu, it's a freaking baseball stadium.
Yeah, I just don't think it's necessary. That's all. That's my only point. And if they decided to urinate in the pool, that's even...
That's a little much. I will say...
A little much? If I peed in your pool, you'd be a little upset.
If you beat me in wiffle ball, what am I going to say? Well...
Yeah, but you wouldn't come outside and look at me peeing in your pool and go, Dan, that's a little much. You'd be looking to throw fit.
Yeah. That's it. I come out. Guns showing. And
right now. In a sleeveless T-shirt.
Yeah. Sleeveless softball shirt.
Neil, he's got no sleeves on, Neil. Can you comment on that, dude? Are you serious?
I mean, he's deadly serious with those guns, so I don't want to say anything too off color here. I mean, I will say this. I'll wrap up Dude, Are You Serious? By tying it back to what we started the show with. Alden Smith had a Dewey. How about Nate Burleson from the Lions trying to save a pizza from falling off the front seat of his car, getting into an accident? We're going to ban pizza now. Come on.
That I'm so glad you brought that up. There were two things I was hoping you would bring up in Dude, Are You Serious? This is one of them. I mean, this guy broke his arm.
Yeah.
After having like a breakout game. He was like the fan, like, again, you don't do fantasy, but like the guy, like, everybody, you got to pick him up this week. He's having a big week. He had a big week, 120 yards receiving. My man broke his arm.
Yeah.
Reaching for a slice of pizza in his car.
Yeah, I got to be honest. There's some pizza places around here that if that was sliding off my front seat, I'd have done the same thing. I love pizza. As you can probably tell.
You and me both. Now, I will put Connecticut pizza above New York pizza, Jersey, Rhode Island likes to talk about their pizza. You give me a nice hot pie from Rico's of Pizza up the road,
fantastic.
Or Sono Pizza. Sono Pizza, our good friends Eddie Marini and the guys over there. You give me a Sono Pizza in my front seat, I'm going to reach for it. And if I crash, I might break an arm.
It's just bad luck, too.
It's just that it.
Yeah. I mean, I know for a fact, as long as we're...
How many pizzas have you eaten in your car in your day?
How many pizzas or pieces?
How many times have you been just eating the pie in your...
I'd say about 1,400. you know,
four digits.
Yeah, I mean, I love, as long as we're giving shout outs to all these groups, the pizza over at JB's on Tierney Street.
Oh, yeah.
The rally cry, you kidding me?
Yeah.
Bacon, onion, roasted garlic. I mean, that's like a, you know, some kind of physicist came up with that thing.
On next week's show, all our guests are going to be local pizza parlors. Just like calling in with what they got.
Yeah.
Rico's Buffalo Pizza or the Hot Oil over there.
Yeah.
Sono, they got their thing.
So he was sober, Burleson.
Yeah, he just wanted a slice of pizza.
I don't blame him. I don't know how the pie is in Detroit.
I mean, imagine, like, he's got to walk into the clubhouse at some point. Like, what do you even say to the dude?
Nice knowing you. I mean, like,
if he doesn't come in every day for the rest of his career with a hot pizza waiting on his thing, somebody in that organization is doing it wrong.
Right.
I don't know how it's right, but you're doing it wrong if you're not doing that.
Yeah. I mean, Jim Schwartz was upset at Jim Harbaugh for a handshake. How upset is he at this guy for breaking his arm over pizza?
Yeah, here come the Lions. We're back from the big game.
God almighty. Matt Stafford's got to be wondering, what the hell is going on with my football team?
Yeah, if Detroit doesn't have enough wrong with that city, they finally have a little glimmer of hope and their guy breaks his arm eating like the Detroit pizza.
Yeah, that's unbelievable.
Oh, my God. Neil, that's a great due to you series.
It was.
You know what I think made it? Was the long pauses between segments, because I think it like added to the whole ambiance of it. I liked it.
No, it lets people, you know, lets people absorb the information, lets them digest it.
I do.
Never drive solo with pizza.
That's exactly right. All right, we got to go quick with our picks here. We're going to open it up to our sheets. We're going to go quick. We don't need to break it down. We know Eli Manning stinks. We've already established that.
Absolutely.
All right, Danny.
Let's start with the Giants.
All right, give us a spread and your pick.
In Kansas City, Chiefs are favored by 4.5. I said it to you before the show, I'm going to take the Giants every week that they're dogs, knowing that eventually they got to win. So I'm taking the Giants in the 4.5.
So Dan Darrow is the guy at the roulette wheel that says, well, black came up 20 times. I got to bet on red.
You got it.
That's my man.
Absolutely.
Boston fans. I'm taking Kansas City here. You know, everybody wants to think that the Giants have this magic left in them, but Kansas City's a tough place to play. I saw that on their schedule early on. Everybody was looking over the Kansas City Chiefs. I was big on the Kansas City Chiefs early on, too.
Yes, you were.
I believe that they were going to be a playoff contender. I think it's going to be a very tough game for Eli Manning and their offense. So I'm going with the Kansas City Chiefs, laying the 4.5. Neil, what do you got, dude?
I'm going to try and pull a reverse con right now, and I'm going to pick the Chiefs. After seeing that awful display on Sunday, and there's no instant fixes. There's no quick fixes here with this Giants team. You can, you know, maybe they'll take this Carl Banks talk about them quitting and use it as inspiration. But if you can't use your friggin' head coach's brother's death as inspiration, you know, some former linebacker saying you quit is not going to actually light a fire under your patootie either. So I think the Chiefs run wild.
Language.
Plus the fact there's only one Banks worth talking about on this show, and that's Ernie.
Yep.
So we're going to go to the Jets. They are in Tennessee playing the Titans. Titans opened at 5. They are now laying 4. I am taking the Jets.
I'm with you, Danny.
That's beautiful.
They've covered every game this year.
Yep.
I'm taking the Jets. I think that the Titans' offense stinks. I know they made some changes on their offensive line, but I think that the Jets' D looks for real. I think they'll be able to get enough offense out of Geno Smith, and Bilal Powell had a big game last week. I think the Jets win this game outright and for sure cover. I'm taking the Jets. Neil?
I think the Titans are a force to reckon with, folks. I think I'm going to take the Titans.
That's just Neil being a jerk.
Well, you know. Hey, he's not a bad guy for that pick. Watch the Jets lose by like 30.
Sure. I mean, don't listen to me and Dan. We don't know what that was. We were 10 last week.
All right, let's head across the pond to London, England, where the disgrace that is the Minnesota Vikings are playing the Pittsburgh Steelers.
The disgrace that is the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Come on. I mean, the Steelers are laying 1. I can't see any way the Vikings win, so they probably will. I can't see any way they win this game. I can't see any way that they don't lose by, like, 10 minimum. I know the Steelers aren't great, but I'm taking the Steelers laying the point. Game opened at a pick. Now it's a point. You're laying with the Steelers. So, Mike, what do you think?
Well, we talked before the season about when Matt Castle would take over the helm.
Please.
And I thought it'd be sooner than this, even, because I think Christian Ponder's horrible.
You're right.
And I think this is the last game for Christian Ponder. But
it's going to be a long flight back over the pond for him because there's no way. I agree with you. There's no way he can start a fifth game.
Exactly.
Is it possible?
I think that they are a better team than the Pittsburgh Steelers, and it frustrates me. But I think that the Steelers are going to win. I'll put Mike Tomlin. I'll put Ben Roethlisberger. I think that getting out of the continental United States helps them, like going like away from everything in Pittsburgh. To watch the Pirates have taken over the town.
Yep.
I think it's good for them. I think the Steelers win this game and finally come out, and then you get a change. And I can see the Vikings having like a 6-10 season here after this. I think at best.
And
they go 1-4, but then they go out and win some games and go 6-6 the rest of the way. Neil, what do you got?
I am so tempted to take Minnesota on this one, but I think that even though Minnesota is technically the home team in this game, that you're going to see a lot of Steelers faithful in the stands, and they're going to be vocal about it. So I think the Pittsburgh Steelers take this one.
All right. Well, now we got a couple, you know, we've got the Buffalo Bills here. We got the Buffalo Bills.
I forgot Tony's team.
Dan didn't even want to talk about the Buffalo Bills.
All right. We got the Bills at home in Buffalo. They're getting 3.5 from the Baltimore Ravens, and my sincerest apologies to Tony.
Turned the microphone over to me like he was just
absolutely
like no other NFL team to even discuss.
Yeah, I'll go first. Just for doing that to Tony, and I have no reason for it, I'm taking the Bills. I feel that bad that I got to take the Bills, even though they'll probably get crushed.
What do we got for a spread at 3.5 in Buffalo? I'm taking the Ravens here. I do think EJ Manuel is solid. I know Spiller had a bad game. I think Spiller, I still think the Ravens. I like the Ravens here. I think this is a nice, comfortable 10-point win for the Baltimore Ravens. I don't care about where they're playing. Neil, what do you got?
I mean, no one circles the wagons like the Baltimore Ravens. I'm taking the Ravens.
I mean, I was just rubbing it in. Tone, do you at least have a pick on this one?
Yeah, I'll probably take the Ravens.
He's taking the Ravens. He's not stupid with his money. One thing you can tell him about, he knows how to manage his money, Tony did. That's why he's a producer.
Am I the only guy taking Buffalo?
Yeah.
They're a shoo-in.
Only
they're losing this game 20-17 and win by this half point and laugh at you guys a week from tonight.
The only reason you took them is because you felt bad you forgot about them.
I do, and I'll probably feel bad Sunday night after I look at the score of this game.
All right, so we all get one pick-em pick here. I'm done picking. After A&M burned me with that stupid late touchdown and I lost by the hook in that Alabama game, I'm done picking NCAA games. So I'm going to stick with the NFL since clearly, as my 0-5 record last week shows, I know a lot about NFL football and gambling. I'm going to take the Eagles. Getting the 10.5 points in Denver. I think Denver, you know, last week they were just running all cylinders off the jump, but you looked at their first 2 weeks and they get off to these slow starts. I think that, you know, they're going to get into a shootout here. And I think that, what we got for an over-under here? 57 in an NFL game is pretty insane.
Yeah.
I still take the over in this game. I think that, Chip Kelly, under Bob Babb's tutelage, is going to put together a nice offensive plan. They're going to put up 30. It probably won't be enough. I could see a 35-31 type game here. But I think they cover the 10.5, and I'm going to take the Eagles. Dan, what do you got for your pick'em?
First of all, did you see that somebody said that what the Broncos should do is meet the Eagles at the airport just to start throwing touchdown passes there so they can get used to it for the game?
Said that you?
No, I think somebody wrote that. Some writer wrote that. I saw it today. Me, I got my signals crossed. I picked two games, so let's throw it on a useless parlay that you'll lose.
You go.
Got Stanford.
Hey, so copy soon. Parlay.
I got Stanford. They're playing Washington State. Stanford's laying 10. The game is in Seattle at the Seahawks field. And I love Stanford in that game. I got a bone to pick with Mike Leach after he embarrassed my Idaho Vandals last week.
Yeah.
And the second game I got is Ohio State. They're at home at the Horseshoe. They're laying 7 over Wisconsin. I love that game. I love the Buckeyes in that game. I think they win that game by a minimum of 17 points.
The quarterback back this week?
There's a lot of reports about that, but I think Guyton's a good quarterback. You know, everybody wants to talk about Braxton Miller. I think Guyton's good enough. I'm not sold on Wisconsin. That kid, Stave, the quarterback.
Yeah.
I'm not sold on that kid, so that's my picks. I like Stanford laying the 10 in Seattle and Ohio State at home laying a touchdown, 7 points.
Parlay.
So put your money on that and lose it.
Win your 3-1. What do you got, Neil? You got a pick for us, dude?
Yeah, so I got I'm gonna go college football as well. I'm gonna go Oklahoma at Notre Dame. Oklahoma is favored by 3.5 according to Yahoo. And you know, I got a feeling that they're gonna blow Notre Dame out of the freaking water. Take Oklahoma.
What kind of Catholic are you,
dude? I love this kid tonight.
All of a sudden, you guys...
I couldn't agree more.
You guys are bosom buddies.
After the embarrassment last year in Norman, losing to that awful Notre Dame team, Stoops is going to come in with a vengeance. I love Neil's pick. It was the third game I looked at.
Is that right?
True story.
Had a blue marker, not a red marker.
I had the Rice Krispie Invisible Ink marker. You get me a kid? I can't see it.
The coder ink.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's the end of our show. I want to bring up one more topic that I want to get Tony D's specific opinion on.
Because
he loves his NBA. I think he knows where I'm going with the story that broke kind of like incognito yesterday. That the NBA, and I don't even want to know your opinion, because I know your opinion. I don't even need to hear it. The NBA, one day next year, all the players are going to get to pick whatever name they want on the back of their jersey. You could do King James. You could do, you know, the truth. Do whatever you want. Mello, whatever you want. And there's people on both sides that are, like, all over it. I think it's awesome.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's a great idea. The NBA has always been known as being, like,
at least they're acknowledging it.
Yeah.
They are. That's how the game of basketball, at this point, it's all one-on-one matchups.
Yep.
I mean, unless you're in San Antonio. They probably will all just say, like, Spurs or something on the back of their thing.
Yeah.
Or a team or something, something like that. But they'll go out and win a championship.
And the NBA has always been so tight on things like this. They don't ever allow stuff like this to go on. So I think it's cool. I like it.
Yeah.
You know?
I think it's awesome. Neil, what do you think, dude?
I'm all for it, and I'm looking for. I would think that hockey's got something up their sleeve to make this season watchable. So be on the lookout for NHL doing something weird.
Neil.
He just said you liked.
Neil, I just said I loved you, and now you're trashing hockey and this thing with the Twitter things on the back of the practice jerseys. This stuff with these nicknames, it's ridiculous. It's just to sell more crap. That's all it is. It's ridiculous. And if you
who cares? That's what sports is about.
I'm not
entertainment.
Done.
Well, I'm talking.
I'm not done attacking you yet. You have more bad things to say about the National Hockey League. We can meet halfway between Norwalk and Hoboken, and we'll settle this thing. Okay.
Best chance to count.
Yeah, I'm not going to listen to that. And you know what? Hockey starts next week, bro, and we're done. We're done trashing it. There's no more of that. It's the man's sport. That's what it is. There's nothing up anybody's sleeve. The NHL is inherently watchable.
Nothing more manly than ice skating. That's true.
You want to get out there? You want to get out there?
I got a comment. I don't know how to ice skate.
Jeez. God,
Winter Classic is on the move.
He's dumping all over my favorite thing to watch on television. That's horrible. Oh.
It's a good watch when you're hungover. It's a very nice, soothing watch. I'll give you that.
It every day.
He's a horrible person. That's all I can say.
You went from your favorite guy in the show.
I hope Oklahoma loses by 100.
He's all about it. Eli Manning stinks. I love it. All right, well, that's the end of our show. The Tri-State Sports Guys, check us out. TriStateSportsGuys.com. We got new content every day. Facebook.com/TriStateSportsGuys and @TriState_sports. Thank you for Mike. Thank you to Mike Vaccaro from the New York Post for chiming in. Hopefully he joins us again. Thank you for Ernie Banks.
I love that.
Just
man.
For being alive. I'm going to thank Ernie Banks every show.
And I'm writing an article, and I'm going to say that Neil wrote it. That's what I'm going to do.
Man is a great guy. You all should put a statue of him right out in front of that station. Dan is a remarkable person because he grew up with the Cubs.
He's right. I mean, I can't argue with logic. I'm just not going to do it. The man's right.
The fact that you're awesome because you grew up with the Cubs kind of is like a little oxymoron there. But I like that about him. I mean, that's why you should have a statue, because you've made it this far.
If I pull in next week and there's not a statue up front.
We've commissioned a couple of local folks.
We're scrapping outside.
We've got Caesar Pelli working
Ernie Banks said it. And Ernie Banks, you already admit it's better than every one of us. Build the damn statue. Don't argue with Ernie.
I mean, Neil, there's nothing we're ever going to do that's going to compete to that. Unless Ricky Henderson comes on here and tells everyone I'm a
him. Maybe I can get Mackie Sasser. Neil would love that.
Yes. I would definitely be down for that.
That's right. All right, check us out next week. We're going to have fantastic guests next week. Somebody possibly bigger than Ernie Banks. You're going to have to tune in next week to check it out. We're the Tri-State Sports Guys.
Mackie Sasser, baby!